Okay, number two on the Peter Brahl process. The tortoise route, which you'll have to go through until next week, in fact, until another week. Let me welcome everyone, Team Energy, almost as a whole, but ministers are not around. And some of the indices are around, so anyway, welcome all. Unfortunately, we're not popular today, I see. No media is around. Or not handling a popular topic, let me say. Yesterday, we started with the Auditor General's briefing, as well as the DPME. Very helpful, because one institution focuses on compliance, and the other one focuses on performance assessment, which I must say, all members, very strikingly, the Auditor General Office was very keen to understand the assessment or evaluation done by DPME, I suppose, to ensure that it enriches their way of doing things in future, which I hope Professor will be doing. I trust and hope you brought your copies of yesterday as well. I'm not sure I did with mine. Might have to get someone to go and grab them. Because as of today, we will get a briefing on the department annual report. That was the very rationale to get the other tools that would help us to go through the annual report today. Look at the highlights, the achievements, and areas where we did make it, and areas where we partially made it. Obviously, I want to be upfront and say, look, we make an assessment in preparation for how we improve in the future. It's not just a mechanical exercise to say how to perform this to manage. At the end of the day, no matter how much elaborate and better assisted process is looking at the entities, Nexus, Nexus, and so forth. But what is also fundamental is to see how the main institution, which is the department itself, has performed. Let me not take much of your time. Let me hand over to the department. On our way to getting departments to take us through the briefing, I'll allow the Deputy Secretary to give us apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. So the following apologies, Honorable Person, who's attending the Portfolio Committee on Water and Environmental Affairs, is dealing with the legislation. And then Honorable Tito, who's on sick leave. And then Honorable Selalo, he indicated that we're going to try to attend, say, but he's also attending the PC on trade and industry where they're dealing with the legislation as well. And then also received apologies from the Minister of Energy and the Director General of the Department of Energy. They're attending a meeting with the President. Those are the apologies, Chairman.
There's no apologies from the Deputy President. Deputy President, my God. Well, we'll be honored if we could attend. Because it's only the president that's not a member of parliament. The deputy president is a member of parliament. So he can attend any committee meeting. The deputy minister, nothing. Anything, Mr. Sandy?
Chairperson, in response to that, let me just say that we had a lot of change that were done late yesterday afternoon. And I think between the two offices, the digital office, you know, the three offices, there was a misunderstanding in terms of the list that has been submitted by the ministry in terms of who's going to be available. But my understanding, the instruction I got from the DG yesterday afternoon was that it was the minister, the deputy minister, the DG, the DGs, Makubena, and the Apane. Those were the four that have been identified as far as I'm aware. I think within the department was a misunderstanding, saying that they were under the impression that they were going to present it all in the minister's apology to accommodate everybody. God that Mr. Beto has done.
We'll just give the benefit of that. One of the members, why I'm raising this, I'm not someone who is sensitive and picky about who attends or not attends. Presentation of an annual report is quite a crucial exercise. It really would behove well and occur well if at least one of the two senior members or two senior leaders, political leaders in particular, is around. The minister did try to connect me. That was when we had a meeting. So he ended up sending an SMS on and about the former apologies coming in, and I understand that. But with the Deputy Minister, I'm really rather concerned. At least efforts should have been done, particularly that we are going to handle an important document. We are assessing the overall performance, and we're going to give profound statements as a committee as to how we see the department has performed. Okay. I've made my statement, I've expressed my views. We're not going to stop now. We're going to carry on. It's just that at times we need to be quite assertive about those things so that things don't get taken for granted. We understand there's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of work. But also we appreciate that we all concur that we need to be alert on certain practices. I'm sure with the department officials that are here, you know that every time you come, you always feel that the only thing we have an eye on is that do you delegate people who have the requisite competence who are appropriate to make the presentation anytime. But at this stage, it is an annual report. One of the epitomes in your interaction between the department and the committee on behalf of the executive and on behalf of parliament. And surely that indicates that some level of importance has to be attached to that exercise. And once again, I'm at the risk of repeating, the minister has taken the effort of contacting me, said, look, I'm not going to make it. Because of the meeting with the president. But I don't know the deputy minister. And I'm blunt and open about that. Over to the department to stand.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members. The department body committee and the representatives of some of our SOEs. Before I start, I think I have to apologize once more that we did have a lot of changes that had to be done at the last minute yesterday afternoon. And unfortunately, most of the people went out of the office, so if the DM's policy did not come through, I really have to apologize for that. We just took for granted that someone had done it, but we it was actually not done. But over and above the apology of the DM, we unfortunately could have to lose all the decisions, which I do appreciate from the department, but there are crucial decisions. The decision is the Amana, who is responsible for any policy and planning, and also the decision is Mr. Makudera, who is responsible for personal articulation as well. Unfortunately, they are all part of the team that is supporting the minister. Today we have, with me, I think maybe to just indicate that with me I have, at the moment, I have the CFO next to me, Ms. Chetty, and then I've got Dr. Barnett next to her, who is responsible for conference and projects and programs, and then next to him I have Ms. Mbambo, who is the DG responsible for nuclear. And can I ask that behind us, if you can start on my left, for people to introduce themselves so that I can see everybody from the department.
My name is Bokhati Mbitse. I'm representing in NHU.
Good morning. My name is Moses Kise from Hydrocarbons. My name is Victor Sevilla, representing Petroleum and Petroleum Regulation.
Morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is George Mbuni. I'm the Director General of Corporate Services.
Good morning, Justin Daniel from Finance.
Good morning, Marika van Esburg from Corporate Services.
Good morning, I'm Mahabu Thiri from International Relations.
Good morning, Philip Coyne, Energy Planning.
Good morning, this is Nkuli Swana, Audit Committee.
Yaswan Gordon, Chairperson of the Audit Committee.
Good morning, Zelda Chavalala from Internal Audit.
Morning, Pongile Galassi, Manager Life and Audit.
Okay. Just before you start, all members, that's something that to remember. You will observe that there's been a document that has been circulated from the research unit of Parliament, which does its own overview of the annual report. Good work, quite appreciated. It was circulated by me, but I just want to make a comment on it. There is a very shocking and astonishing comment in that document, which refers to things that are not acceptable. I want to formally indicate that I disown that term not acceptable, because I don't believe officials can tell us what to do. I want to put on the report, and I'm going to be communicating formally with the head of the search about that. As far as I'm concerned, we have the authority to do so as elected representatives, not employed officials to go about saying areas of concern with regards to the performance of a department are not acceptable. I'm saying that because I want to put on record. Thanks. I know the department doesn't know about it, it's an internal thing, but I wanted to be put on record publicly, because it's not the first time the first department in Parliament does something like this. Thank you. We are aware.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. Before I start, I just wanted to explain the way that we have structured today's presentation. In the past, we used to get each branch to reproduce the annual report as it was to the committee in terms of going through the achievements and the non-achievements and the partial achievements. What we are hoping to do this year was that the DG had planned on making the presentation that you have on the board at the moment, which is going to be very high level in terms of the performance environment that we worked on last year and all of that kind of overview information. That will be followed by financial performance overview presented by the CFO, because it was a request that was made by the committee last year that let's give more time to the finance side, because you normally have it at the end and we don't have enough time to engage with the CFO. So that is what we've decided to do. Over and above the two presentations, there is a third presentation which I think members received as well, which is a presentation that is a response that was requested from us on Thursday, I repeat, Thursday evening, a response on issues that the chairperson wanted us to address. This is the third report, the big presentation. And I'm going to ask, with your permission, Chair, whether would you like us to go through that presentation as well? This is the big document. There are three documents that have been circulated. This one is a digital overview, then there is the finance, and then there's another big which talks to the alignment of the department's contribution to the SONA, to the MDGs, to all of the long, long list.
Okay. So, Sandy, let's start with yours, DG's overview of finance, and we'll look at time and see how much we can take on the other highlights.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, members. To kick off the DG's presentation, which is mainly the overview of the department's performance for the 12th financial year, I'm just going to briefly go through the service delivery environment. I look at the service delivery improvement plan for the department, the organizational environment, the key policy developments and the legislative changes for last year, the key capital projects that we're involved with, the triple P's that were undertaken last year, the SOEs, or SOCs reporting to the Minister of Energy, and the high-level performance overview in terms of our performance information that we've been addressing our predetermined objectives and how we've performed against them. As members, the service delivery environment of the Department of Energy, I just want to make as an introduction that the global energy agenda in the last year, going into this year, has been dominated by the energy security, energy assets, and the deployment of sustainable or renewable energy. The department, as part of the global energy environment, we focus mostly on the global energy agenda in the areas of diversification of our energy mix, through which we'll be implementing the IRP in terms of what has been determined in the access to diversified energy markets. We've looked at the deployment of sustainable energy through the renewable energy programs that have been implemented, and energy access through engagement in low-high, which is continental, as well as international platforms. As a department, we've had engagements, various engagements, which we can present. Oh, by the way, sorry, Charles, of course, we have a full presentation if you've got the time, which actually details now the international engagements and international activities that we undertook last year. That's another presentation. If you want us to do a separate part, you can distribute it to the members if you want that, which is specifically identifying which engagements we had, bilaterals and the bilaterals that we had in the year last year, and what were they about. So we can all present that afterwards, as we said, or we can speculate it to the members.
We don't have copies of that. Notwithstanding whether we're able to work or not, can that be regulated? I'm sure Mlulam can address that. We'll look at time to some in terms of going through it.
Thank you. Coming to the petroleum environment, as we all noted last year, we continued to experience the fluctuation in the crude oil prices. We did on our individual pockets. We were aware of that. But nonetheless, over and above what has mentioned, the petroleum products local environment did ensure that we had enough supply throughout the year. With the continuation of the supply of crude oil from Iran, it meant that us in South Africa, or the South African oil companies, have to start focusing on other sources of supply. That's the increase in our involvement in the Africa continent, imports of crude oil that were done within the country. That has increased a lot over the year in terms of saying that we had in the past had lower than 40% that had been done in terms of reaching continental imports. We managed to reach an average of about 41% within that environment for us to get enough supply. APA has focused also on harmonizing the petroleum legislation to attract investment in the continent, in the upstream sector, as well as conducting investigations in the intra-African trade in petroleum products. The department internally has continued to improve in terms of the turnaround time as we choose the personal applications. We have, as we had promised beginning of the year, that we are going to be looking into improving that in terms of saying that what information do we get as a department in terms of the applications that we receive. We have received a few queries, which have been able to address, and overall, we're able to actually work within the agreed 90 days in terms of the turnaround time. We also have set in awareness campaign to try and improve the quality of the information that is brought to us as a department. Coming to the area of nuclear, I think following the Fukushima incident, South Africa is one of the countries that are engaged in nuclear. We were part of the countries that joined in We're part of the countries that went on to look at the disadvantages or the lessons learned out of the Fukushima. As part of the global IAEA safety action plan to address lessons learned from Fukushima earthquake, South Africa responded by developing its national safety action plan in line with the IAEA safety plan. For South Africa, the safety reassessment culminated in a national report on the implications of the Fukushima accident on Kubek nuclear power plant and the Faru 1 research centers, which was presented to the extraordinary meeting of the Convention of nuclear safety on the Fukushima held in Vienna in August 2012. Coming to the area of electricity and electrification, we have noted less challenges in the electricity supply during the course of the 2020 financial year. Within our INEP, which is the Integrated National Electrification Program, we have achieved 11% above target in terms of the number of connections that we made last year. However, respective of the above number of connections achieved, the electrification rate has to be increased, unfortunately, to address the large backlog that are still existing in the country. The program is facing some challenges, which will be addressed later by my colleagues in terms of level of accountability by our municipalities, the increased cost of base metals that are used to manufacture the hardware components. More households have to be electrified in deep rural areas where the cost is much higher to implement. The issue of lack of infrastructure and the lack of skills and resources in the municipal technical department. There is also the challenge of different technical standards between ECOM and municipalities that we need to consider as we move forward. Post the EDIH closure, we have received 320 million during 2012, the end of 2012, as a seed fund that was made available to pilot ADAM program, and it is to be augmented by either the tariffs or the fiscal based approach. We have identified 7 municipalities and 2 metros for that particular project to start looking at how we as a department are going to be addressing the responsibility on the electricity distribution infrastructure in the country. In the clean energy area, we have had challenges that I'm sure the committee is very much aware of in terms of our solar water heating program. The objective of the solar working program is basically to address or provide access to those social areas that need government performance. To date, the program has achieved over 350,000 installations, and we have completed the standard of our policy aimed at funding the solar water heating program. Some of the challenges that we have experienced in this area is that the quality of the roof structures in the identified areas is becoming a challenge. Some of the buildings that are there cannot sustain the weight of the solar water system. The issue of the water quality and quantity and quality has also been one of our challenges. It is virtually causing the clogging of water pipes. We have also experienced challenges in the utilization of cheap imported systems that have a high failure rate, as well as poor workmanship in the installation process. We have completed the standard offer policy and aimed at funding the solar water program, and we are hoping that going forward we will be able to have more connections or have more sustainable connections implemented over the latter part of this financial year going into next year. In the area of RPPs, as other members would know, it's been in the media. We've reached the financial close in August 2012 in respect of 28 preferred bidders, with the provision of 1,415 megawatts of renewable energy, and some of the construction had already started as at the end of the financial year in those areas. What we have made sure that happened, apart from the normal work or the normal procedures that we followed, is that we get most of the better leaders to commit in terms of their processes to commit to spend some time on women-owned supply businesses. They have committed to date close to 1 billion rand, which should be focused solely on women-owned supply businesses. In the area of the solar park, the feasibility study that has had a number of challenges has been completed, and the next step following that is now in action. And I'm sure that one of my colleagues will be able to expand on the issue of the solar park more in detail. Coming to the clean energy environment, in the biofuels area, the biofuels mandatory blending services were promulgated also last year. The draft biofuels planning framework was also developed during the year. And also the finance minister pronounced on the biofuels support mechanism in his 2018 appropriation bill tabling. On the area of service delivery improvement plan, the department has unfortunately been running behind in the provision of the service delivery improvement plan. I'm glad to report to the committee today that we have finalized the first draft of the service delivery improvement plan, and we're hoping that by the end of this month of November, we'll finalize the final document. But as at the end of the year, we had the first draft out on the process. The plan is based on national priorities as defined by the National Development, the NDP, and the Department Strategic and Operational Plan. The department has identified the four priorities in terms of our service delivery plan. The first one is the electrifying of the country. We have to take into account our INEP, we have to count our electricity distribution structures, and also take into account our electricity provision programs. The department has also identified the provision and installation of solar water heaters, which means we were looking at improving on the funding process that we have, increasing the number of connections and making sure the sustainability of the units that get installed. The third priority that we've identified is the improvement of the petroleum licensing process, that we're not, much as it's legislated at 90 days turnaround time, we are working very hard to make sure that we move towards a 60-day turnaround time, as well as, of course, improving on our system, our licensing system internally. Improvement of the nuclear licensing process, as well as, of course, the fact that we are going to be finalizing this process by the end of November. Within our organizational environment, we are still a young department, but we've been fortunate now that after 3.5 years of running in different places and sharing buildings, we have finally moved into our head office, which is located in Pretoria. And the name of the building has just been announced as Mandimba House.
I hope you will explain to Prof what Mandimba.
Mandimba means, okay, I think someone is going to forget myself. Amanda. Oh, it's energy. It's energy. We still have a challenge when it comes to our regional offices. We do appreciate that some of the members here and also in the other house have been having serious concerns about the accommodation of our regional offices. We are in continuing engagement with Department of Public Works for us to secure much safer and much more workable environment for the regional offices. In terms of the staff complement for last year, according to our approved structure, we have 818 approved posts, out of which 556 were funded and filled, and we're also able to support the internship program with 56 interns in the department for last year. One of the other things we did last year was to conduct a survey for the department. Being a young department, we needed to have our own culture. In other words, for us to say what have we gained that is positive from our history, when we are still part of the Department of Water and Energy, and what we would like to see going forward in our department. So that culture survey was undertaken across the department last year, and results came out last year, and as the senior management, together with the DG, we are working towards implementing some of the challenges or some of the recommendations that came out of the survey. Within the IT environment, I'm glad to report that we had a 97% network availability last year, and there were no security breaches that came for the period of 2012-13. Highlight of the key policy development and legislative changes, the following are the five that were introduced during the course of last year. By the end of the year, we had our draft strategic stocks petroleum policy and draft stocks implementation plan. We had amendments of the regulations regarding the petroleum product certifications and standards. We also provided the draft regulations regarding the mandatory blending of biofuels with petrol and diesel. We also had by the end of the year our first draft of the integrated energy plan, which is covering the period up to 2050. We also developed a new household electrification strategy to address the INEP or the electrification program, taking into account the revised targets that we want to achieve as a department, and also taking into account the various challenges that we have with the current electrification program. Still on the electrification program, the next slide just indicates roughly what was the performance in the electrification program. In total, we had allocated 3.1 billion for the electrification program for last year. 1.8 of that went to ESCOM, who were able to connect 121,041 houses. And over and above that, there were further connections of 21,831 that were done from their own funding. So in total, ESCOM provided us with a total of 142,872 connections for last year. Municipalities were allocated 1.1 billion, out of which they were able to give us 15,620 connections. In the non-grid environment, we allocated 86 million, which came out with 9,343 connections. And all in all, we achieved 202,835 connections last year, which translates to about 11% of what the annual target that we have put for ourselves of 108,000. This has been able to achieve through our continued efficiency, communication, and engagement with the implementers on the ground, as well as good cooperation from ESCOM and some of the municipalities. Chairperson, with your permission, I'm going to go through the next slide. The next slide just indicates the number of PPP that were attended by both the minister and the deputy minister last year. It gives us the date, the area where it was, and what was the engagement in that particular one. So slide number 15 and 16 is just an indication of all the PPP that were undertaken by our political leaders last year. In the area of
what was the main character of those PPPs? Were just all of them about electrification, for example? I'm just saying that one of the members, well, that's the main issue I had about, without enumerating them as you say in Kampumelana now, but just the key character of the various sections.
Can I just ask Dr. Bana to go in and be specific?
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I think it is spread about a couple of issues. The one is that yes, electrification service delivery is one of part that we focused on. There's another part that was pretty much active in that period was also the startup of all the IBPs, the renewable energy IBPs window one. And then another component is we call broader community engagement in terms of upliftment programs that is spread through various activities on energy efficiency, awareness of safety of electricity. And lastly, also in petroleum environment, there was a couple of petroleum activities throughout the country, ranging from opening of IECs in deep rural areas up to formal large garages. Thanks, Chair.
Slide number 17 talks to the state-owned entities reporting or companies reporting to the Minister of Energy. During the 2013 financial year, we continued with engagement at ministerial level with the chairpersons of the committee of the board, the engagement between the Director General and the CEOs of entities as well as the departmental officials on their individual subcommittees. We have unfortunately experienced low progress with the implementation of the Minister's directive regarding the restructuring of the SAFE group. I am aware that we have a number of times been to this committee to report on the restructuring process. Unfortunately, as I've indicated, there has been some delays in the process, and we are working hard now with SAFE directly to make sure that this happens at the end of this financial year. in the area of EDIH, EDI holdings, the winding up process was finalized during the year. But unfortunately, we could not, as I always say, the door has been shut, the key has been turned, but it's still hanging on the door. We are not in a position to pull out the key at the moment because we've got, first of all, we're delayed by the finalization of the CCMA case that was brought by the EDIH employees who wanted EDIH to actually pay them some compensation in terms of the fact that they had to close the organization. Negotiations went on for a period of about just over a year, and the final decision was taken by our principal so that let us pay out and close the door. So that was done in December last year. And then from there, the company went into a deed registration process. However, just to avoid me coming back here next year and say we are not closed, we have come up with an additional challenge in this area that one of the employees had actually engaged in some fraudulent activities during the time of the DIH. Unfortunately, that case is only coming on next week. It's only starting next week. So until such time that that also has been cleared, we cannot fully close off the EDI. But there is no activity there. The money has been returned to National Treasury. The money that's been transferred, the department has been transferred. It's only the cash in the bank that is for the minor administrative issues. Otherwise, there's no more activity happening there. In the area of, I know that some of the members have been very much concerned about the area of internal oversight capacity within the department for SOE. Unfortunately, that has not improved during the course of last year. We're still working to get some more resources for us to be able to be more effective in that area. In conclusion, Chairperson, I'd like to take the committee on the last slide number 18, that talks about the performance overview of the department. Last year, this is now year 12, 11, 12, the department achieved, I think it was 46% of its target. And we were very unhappy about it, and I'm also aware that the committee was very unhappy about that. I'm glad to report that this year we have been able to achieve about 58%, but I need to be quick to say that 58% is how it gets presented by the Auditor General, because it only report on the target that has been fully achieved. If you can just indulge me for two seconds. In the department, when we measure the achieved and the partially achieved, you say if you said I was going to achieve 150,000 connections this year, and you achieve 140,000 or even 145,000, that to us is partially achieved. So in other words, a lot of work in terms of funding, human resources, has gone into the target, but it's said it was not fully achieved, so we classify it as partially achieved. That's why when we calculate as a department, when we calculate our process or our achievements for the year, we take into account the partially achieved because the majority of it has gone beyond 75% of achievement. So for us, in terms of how we measure our performance, we were sitting at close to 80% of achieved of our target. So the 118 is in the, sorry, the 57 is indicated as partially achieved. Those are the targets that have not been completed, most of which will be things like your e-mobile, things like your electrification, the transferring of funds, because those things do not transfer the full amount, those kinds of things that are happening. So it's not like to say there was nothing done. A lot of work has gone into that. The not achieved, of course, is hitting 11%. That doesn't make us happy. But I am glad to say that we have made a drastic improvement in that area in terms of the department. And also before I close off, on the issue of the, if you look at the slide itself, there's 198 talking and then there's a 204. The 204 that's indicated at the bottom, there was a 204 that was counted by the Auditor General in terms of how they calculated their targets. But when we recalculated as a department, we realized that we had a double count for God of six of those targets. That's why there is a change. There's a difference in the numbers. I just wanted to put it there so that when you look at this thing and you look at annual reports, the member don't get confused. Why are we reporting on 198 when there's 204?
We have engaged the issue on that, and they're in agreement, and that's where we left it, in terms of that. Chairperson, as I indicated, we will start with the CFO today to go through the financial performance, and then the detailed alignment of the DOE's response to the following is the thick document that I spoke about earlier, which we'll talk about in detail now in terms of each area, what we've been engaged with for last year. And with your permission, can I leave it at that for now? And before Justin comes, can I also request that once Justin is done, we could request that the individual members that here, if there's anything that they need to say or they need to add in terms of this presentation, or we'll wait for the questions.
Fine.
Can I ask Dr. Barnett if there's anything else that would like us to make about high level achievements for last year?
Honourable Chair, members, no, I think it's summarised, and if the thick document is I think it's more details being given there, but we're more than willing to share specific details on the achievements of the effective program ongoing.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. I'll take you through the financial statements as of 31 March 2013. But before I do so, Chair, yesterday we had the privilege of hearing the feedback from the Auditor General and DPME. The Auditor General does cover the same period that I will be presenting now, that is 1 April 2012 to 31 March 2013. However, Chair, DPME presented a snapshot as of November 2012. The period that they cover is hybrid. It is part of the 2012 financial year and a little of 2013 financial year. And I also want to state, Chair, that some of the criteria in terms of the assessment have been critical in some instances. So we have to put it in some context. That if I give an example, Chair, the disability cases that were mentioned yesterday. The processes are protracted. It is the way our government departments do work. And there's adherence to the dispute resolution procedures involved. And there are other parties involved in the disability cases. Example, the union members. And sometimes, if we're going to rush the process, good cases will be won in the late court because of technical issues where we didn't have adherence to. So I think when DPME does present, there are issues that are very peculiar to certain departments that must be considered. They've also stated, like an example, if I can give another one, on the Disposal Committee for Financial Assets. Unfortunately, Chair, we are a new department, and we don't have many assets to dispose of. So they were expecting 3 meetings, but we could only have 1, because once the relocation is completed, we had some assets to dispose of. So it becomes only necessary or relevant to have 1 meeting. But I've engaged the gentleman after the presentation, and agreed with some of the issues, that their criteria in some instances were very clinical. So I think with the next assessment will be the period for which I am presenting now for the full financial year will be done, I think, in 2 weeks from now. And it is October 2013 when that assessment will be done. It's almost 6 months after the financial year end. So if we're going to be assessed, I believe the AG, DPMS, and the Department of Energy should be presenting their reports for the same period to get a full assessment and a true reflection of how the department actually performed. And then for us to develop an improvement plan going forward would be beneficial to all parties, and especially to the department as well. It would make the reporting a lot easier for us to present. With that said, Chair, I'm going to proceed but I thought that report yesterday needed to be put into context. The year under review, that's 31 March 2013, a full financial year, is the third year that the Department of Energy has been operating as an independent department. In preparing these financial statements, Chair, it has been with some challenges with the financial resources that we have and the human resources. One of the challenges that we have with human resources is that financial staff are fairly mobile, but with the Department of Energy, I think that has been fairly stable with some movement, but the bigger challenge lies in the skills of the financial staff that we do have. But our problems at the department is not insurmountable. There are problems that can be resolved, and there is a process underway to resolve those issues. The department's budget allocation increased from 8.6% from 6.2 billion in the 2011-12 financial year to 6.7 billion in 2012-13 financial year. Of the 8.6 increase between the 2 years, 7.46% was allocated to transfers and subsidies. The remaining increased percentage of 1.14 was allocated to the department's operational budget. From the 2012-13 total budget allocation of 6.7 billion, 93.6% was allocated to transfers as follows. The Integrated National Electrification Program, 3 billion. Transnet New Multi-Product Pipeline, 1.5 billion. Nexa, 565 million. Energy Efficiency and Demand Side Management, 1.02 billion. The balances were transferred to state-owned entities and other smaller programs. The remaining portion of 6.4%, that's 429 million, of the total budget was allocated to the department's operational budget, which covers the daily needs of the department. The department's total spend as of 31 March 2013 stopped at 98.9% of the budget. The financial performance of the department, I'll just go very quickly and give you some detail. The total revenue that we collected for the year was 7.1 billion, which includes the budget from the fiscal allocation of 6.7 billion, some of the aid assistance that we received, petroleum license fees, the ADEM program, money that we received from EDI, the ex-EDI, is also included in revenue. Current expenditure?
Oh, wait. I thought it was that gets taken back to National Treasury.
Yes, sir, it does. Further down, you find usually the trust. Under expenditure, we have current expenditure. Here it covers the cost of employees, that's the compensation of employees, and all goods and services, and we cover all operational costs under that line item. Transfers and subsidies, which I've just explained, was to all entities, municipalities, ESCO. Expenditure for capital assets was 10.5. It's machinery and equipment. Payment for financial assets were little losses, financial losses that we've written off. Then the surplus that we had for the financial year was 464 million, of which the voted funds means it's the remaining unspent funds from the fiscal allocation to the department. Department revenue of 2.5, these are petroleum licenses and other funds that we received. And direct exchequer payments is 387, and that change is the EDI funds. And aid assistance, we have to return some. We also check whatever funds the department receives, we surrender to the National Revenue Fund immediately. And if you don't, there's a swipe from the World Bank to Google. But it's just a time issue sometimes we have at the end. But whatever money the department receives, we are not allowed to retain in the bank account. We have to surrender to National Revenue Fund. I'll continue with budget overview. Expenditure per economic classification, which I mean, these are the main categories within the income statement. Transfer and subsidies, we had a budget of 6.3 billion. We actually spent 6.2 billion. And we had an actual spend in terms of percentage of 99.6%. Compensation of employees, which is our operational cost, 206 budget, the actual spend was 201. The actual percentage spend was 97.4%. Goods and services, we had a budget of 207. We spent 170. In total, we spent 81.9% of the budget allocated. Payments for capital assets were a very small spend. Chair, there was a question raised, and I think it's a few terms that I presented. In terms of the oversight that we do perform on the transfers and subsidies, I think Dr. Barnard is there, which can assist and add to my report back. MOAs are signed with all municipalities and entities before transfers are made, and the memorandum of understanding or memorandum of agreement. Once the funds are transferred to those municipalities or entities, IHEC will then go out to verify installations and implementations that have happened. Once the department is confirmed that these implementations have occurred, then only will finance receive an authorized request for payments to occur. So it is an oversight function being performed, however, there is still room for improvement. And there is a strategy in place by Dr. Barnard's department, and he'll give the detail in that regard. The budget overview per program, so to give you an overview of how the program is performed. Administration, which covers the ministry, DG's office, internal audit, the CFO's office, the chief operating officer. We had a budget of 256 million, 219 was spent, 92.8% in the total spend. And the main reason here, Chair, is that we had some understanding in the compensation of employees, and it was mainly due to the department having anticipated that the SMS salary adjustments would take place in January. However, the adjustments were only implemented in April 2013 as per DPSA instructions, so we had an underspend in administration and the compensation of employees. Energy policy and planning, we had a spend of 1.5, a budget of 1.5, sorry. We spent 1.5, small underspend. Petroleum regulation, we had a budget of 1.1 billion. We spent 1.1. It actually spent 100% of their budget. Programs and projects had a budget 3.1 billion. They spent 3.1. However, there's a small balance that has not been transferred for non-grid items. Nuclear had 646 million, spent 642 million, at a small underspend, and these are projects that were not completed at the event. Here, the next slide, as requested, was us to highlight the targets, the planned targets that were set, what was achieved, what was partially achieved and not achieved against the budget for each program. However, I want to say, Chair, there are no trends, if you look at the last 3 years, in terms of the achievements against the unspent budget or the not achieved against the unspent budget. There are no trends that you can drive or direct correlation to any of them. And the reason is, Chair, that the targets that have been set, there's a new department, we've come through many challenges, and one of them being not having the strategic plans and the planned targets aligned to the budget. And as a new department, I think we are maturing in that effort, and I think you'd perhaps find improvements going forward. But in, just to give an overview, in administration, for the section that I've mentioned earlier on, we had three targets that were not achieved, and the budget of spend of 92.8%. Beyond that, there are no change to be derived from it. Energy policy and planning. Of 68 targets that were planned, 10 were not achieved, and they've not spent almost 1.1% of their budget. Energy regulation. At 16 planned targets, 3 was not achieved, which is about 18%. But they spent 100% of the budget. Hence, you could see there is no correlation between achieved and not achieved and the budget. Programs and projects. There were planned 9 tasks, 6 not achieved, which is almost 66%. And there's a spend of 98.9%. So unspent was 1.1% against not issued targets of 66%. Nuclear energy, at planned targets of 10, one not achieved, and spent 99.4% of their budget allocated to them. Share just some highlights to the financial performance. The department's total spending for the year was 6.6 billion. That is 98.9% of the total budget of 6.7 billion. The above represents underspending of 1.12%, which is about 75.4 million. A total of 28.1 million, that is 37% of the overall balance of 75.4 million, remaining after the transfer payments. The composition of overall unspent money is for compensation of employees, which I have mentioned, was 5.2 million. Goods and services, 37.54 million. Transfer payments, 28.1 million. Capital assets, 4.5 million. Some reasons here for those variances. An analysis of the financial performance. A rollover request was submitted to National Treasury for the unspent budget, amount of 69.3 million. Although 75 million was unspent, we could only request a rollover for 69 million. And the reason here is there is a criteria that we have to adhere to at the end set by National Treasury for the amounts or transactions that we could request a rollover for. So not all is granted by National Treasury. However, subsequent to year-end, we received an approval for 28.07 million, was approved for INEP non-grid. Compensation of employees, the under expenditure of compensation, which I've explained, was the late implementation by DPSA on the salary adjustment for SMS members. Goods and services, the underspending of 37.5 million is due to the late receipt of invoices and delay in the delivery of goods and services. The following were major payments that could not be dispersed, and they're not all of them. The development of the 20-year liquid fuel infrastructure roadmap, incorporating an audit of the refineries, amount of 2.3 million. The review of the electricity distribution industry assets status report, it was 11.8 million with the asset rehabilitation program attached to it. Continued its goods and services. The acquisition of an electronic monitoring tool to monitor the implementation of electricity commitments and various energy projects, an amount of 6.5 million. Transfer payments, an amount of 28.07 million of the overall balance of 28.1, which was unspent. A rollover request was submitted to National Treasury. They have approved 28.07 million for non-grid solar home systems project. Capital expenditure, the underspending in CapEx is due to delay in the procurement processes in some projects and the acquisition could not be finalized before year-end. Chair, I have presented everything on transfer payments. This slide just gives an overview of the only part that has not been transferred in totality has been INEP non-grid. We had a budget of 86.4, 58.3 has been transferred, remaining with a 28.07 million that has not been transferred, but which has been subsequently approved by Treasury as a rollover for this financial year. Financial performance continued. The detailed expenditure, we've selected the top five expenditure. Travel and subsistence, we have an actual spend of 37 million against a budget of 38. Chair, the present from international coordination is here, and I also have a list of the travel that has been undertaken in the financial year, and I could go through this if the committee would require that details. Lease payments takes into account office accommodation, machinery equipment, and all rental for other machinery, which we have a spend of 28.5 million. Operating tenants are for professional membership fees, that is local and international, subscription fees, resettlement costs, study loans, vehicle tracking, and some public engagement costs as well. we spent 23.9 million. Property payments, it includes the one-off payments, DPW, for the bill of quantities, which was mandatory for our relocation to the head office. We spent there 23.6 million in total for the year. Consultants and contractors, agencies, outsourced services, we spent 15.3 million, and we do have some details of the cost of why we incurred these consultant costs, if the committee requires that information, and I do have it here, Chair. The financial position of the department, which is the balance sheet of the department as of 31 March 2013. We had unauthorized expenditure of 14.8 million. Chair, this has been carrying forward from the first year of our inception. It was unauthorized expenditure of 14.8 million, which is due to an infrastructure grant transfer payment made to Imtumbeni Municipality in May 2010. The transfer was appropriated in 2009-10 financial year. The payment to the municipality was processed in March 2010, but transferred in May 2010 after the financial year due to a system rejection of the banking details. The amount has been condoned by National Treasury on 9th of November 2011. However, National Treasury has not indicated if the approval was granted with funding or without funding, and the department is currently engaging National Treasury in this regard. Cash and cash equivalents are the balances in the bank which has to be surrendered as well after year end. Chair, we've also had total, we have irregular expenditure that incurred in 2011-12 and the 2012-13. Total irregular expenditure incurred during the financial year of 2012-13 is 8.24 million. 219,000 relates to non-compliance to SEM processes, and these are for various reasons. And then 8.02 million relates to lease payments made directly to the landlord of Trevena campus. And Chair, we have reported on this last year and a few times in the year that passed. In terms of the MOU signed between DOE and DMR, during the split of DME, the Department of Minerals and Energy, it was agreed Department of Minerals was to defray all accommodation costs and will be reimbursed by the Department of Energy for its portion of the expenditure. However, DMR subsequently refused to accept the disbursement or the reimbursement from DOE. The department was then forced to settle monthly payments directly to the landlord. And due to the clinical classification by the Auditor General, these payments all are classified as irregular. However, Chair, nobody can occupy accommodation without paying for it, so we have to pay. So although not paid directly to DMR, it was the classification of the Auditor General. In this case, the department is the
saying that was supposed to have been paid to DMR directly. That 8.02 million.
Okay. The department is 100% shareholder in South African Nuclear Corporation Limited, that is NEXCO, and owns 2.2 shares of one rand each. The current liability sits at 75.7 million. The breakdown is the surplus of the voted funds that is surrendered in National Treasury and which has been surrendered already after year end. The Department of Revenue surrendered to National Treasury was 62,000. We were also owing South African Revenue Services 138,000, which is subsequently paid. And we were owing to the pension funds 28,000, which have also been paid subsequent to year end. Chair, this slide just highlights the three financial years that we've been in existence. That's 2010-11, 2011-12, 2012-13. And in all the years we've received unqualified opinion. And these were the findings by the support functions and the line function. These were findings that were felt by the Auditor General. And all we're trying to highlight here, Chair, is that in the first financial year we had 37 findings in total. The next financial year we had 38. But 38 has also got to be put in context. The IT department has not been audited in the first year and was due to a new department. New systems were to be developed. it would be early to have an audit for a system that has not matured. So it happened in the second financial year. And in the last financial year, we've had 17 findings in total. And all is saying here that we have made some improvements, and we're saying that we still have some more work to do in a hope to achieve the final pre-audit. Chair, all of the findings that you've seen, the 17 that you've noted on the previous slide, action plans have been developed by all line functions and support functions as a branch to address some of the findings by the Auditor General. And some of these action plans, the internal audit, will perform their assessment of the improvements that we've achieved and report on them quarterly. But as of 31 July 2013, most of these audit findings were addressed by the department. With that, Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chetty.
Chairperson, honorable members, good morning. My name is Mahabu Thiri from the International Relations Directorate, and I will be presenting to you the activities that were undertaken in the 2012-2013. We have published our presentation in the following manner, Chair. Firstly, we look at the policy context as to what that informs us as we engage with identified and strategic partners across the globe. We'll also give you the key highlights of our engagement financially and under review. We'll look at the agreements signed in this financial year. Also, we'll be touching on the multilateral and bilateral engagement that we had, the number of conferences, capacity building, and then we will conclude. Chair, to start off, let me perhaps put this presentation in the context to say that our engagement with identified partners around the globe is informed precisely by overarching energy policy that seeks to ensure that there is energy security, there is access to funding to implement policies, but of course the imperative of climate change, of course skills and capacity, the whole issue of diversity, of diversifying our supply, of course access to technology, to information, so as to access resources. With regards to the key highlights at the bilateral level, Chair, we can highlight that we have led negotiations of the Rhein-Inger Treaty between the governments of South Africa and of the Democratic Republic of the Congo on the Rhein-Inger Hydro Power Project. We can also highlight that we have signed the funding agreement between the governments of the Republic of South Africa and the a kingdom of Denmark, at least in the renewable energy space. With regard to the multilateral engagements, we have participated in the BRICS Summit, the fifth BRICS Summit that was hosted here in South Africa, Durban, and we have actually contributed to that SDG declaration on which we have proposed the establishment of Energy Forum. We did also host the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency so as to strengthen the bilateral relations between South Africa and the agency. As you know, that the RP commits us to have nuclear into the new energy mix. We did also, at the same time, host the Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review, so as to introspect ourselves infrastructure-wise as to how far how we, the country, embark on this nuclear business program. Also, we did participate on the second conference of Energy Ministers of Africa, and we have hosted the Africa EU Energy Partnership Conference here in Cape Town. The number of applicants of note, Chairperson, is out of funding and technical assistance from the government of Denmark, as I've already mentioned. The government of Germany also, we've signed with them the agreement that will be renewable energy focused, so as we did with Russia, so as to ensure that we look at other areas of cooperation, so as we did with the government of Botswana. Emerson, I will be now turning to the specific bilateral engagement. In the month of April 2012, we did engage government of Venezuela, Ghana, and this specifically talks to the issues of security of supply. As you know, that these countries have got oil resources. So as we did with the PNC, with Germany, in the month of May, we also had working visits to Turkey, Botswana. We did also have the 8th session of South Africa Spain annual consultation, that is at the last level. We did also have the DNC with Mozambique, Chile. We also hosted the Botswana Minister of Energy in South Africa, so as we did with the Qatari Minister of Energy and the Chairperson and the Managing Director of Qatar Petroleum. We did also have the opportunity to host the Grossler, the Vice Chancellor of Germany, and he is also a federal Minister of Economics. As I've mentioned before, we had a lot of interaction with the government of DRC, both at the senior officials level and at the ministerial level. We also had participated on the 11th session of South Africa, Russia, ITAC, and the working visit to Spain. We have got a bilateral commission with Nigeria. And so we undertook the senior officials meetings to track record and to take stock of what is it that we are doing on areas of cooperation. So we did with South Korea. We did also host the Director General of Rosatom. As you know, that you may recall, Chairperson, that we are having a cooperation agreement in the field use of nuclear. We also had the opportunity to visit Denmark as well. So as the working visit to, we participated on the official state visit of China, which was happening on the margins of the BRICS Summit in March 2013, at the same time of the working visit of the Russian president. Chairperson, with regard to multilateral engagement, we did participate on the preparatory meeting of the Energy Ministerial, which was hosted in the United Kingdom. We did, as I mentioned previously, Africa-EU partnership that was hosted here in Cape Town. We did participate in the SADC review of the Regional Infrastructure Development Master Plan. We are a bona fide member of the IRENA statute, so did we participate in a number of IRENA council and ministerial meetings. I've mentioned the BRICS and the IEA. With regard to conferences, I can just mention that we did participate in the 6th annual Africa-Germany Forum,
third ministerial conferences have mentioned the World Economic Forum for Africa had a success in the Atabab. We did also participated in the Rosatom hosted Atom Expo that was hosted in Moscow. So it will be called Malabo, Editorial Guinea, to share South Africa's experience in the oil and gas. For your 20 year conference on sustainable development, as you know, that we have made some commitments as far as reducing the greenhouse gases are concerned. Africa-Australia Infrastructure Conference in Sydney. We are annually participating in the International Atomic Energy Agency General Conference. Issues of women in the 3CE Clean Energy Symposium at the U.S. We also did participate in the World Energy Forum that was hosted during the World Energy Week in Abu Dhabi in October 2012. Also, I've mentioned the issue of the second conference of the energy ministers. Ms. Zungu already has spoken about the Fukushima conference, but we are now observing the outcomes of the Fukushima conference. We did also participate in the sessions that the energy related on the annual Davos World Economic Forum. We also did participate in the Rural Electrification Project conference that was hosted in Brazil. With regard to capacity building, Chairperson, we are saying that all agreements that we are signing with our identified partners have got components of capacity building, exchange of experience and sharing of information. We are also interested in the know-how, technology, and how is that going to affect our policies going forward. So we did participate in take opportunities that were offered by agencies with whom we are having agreements with, such as the International Energy Agency and the IAEA, as well as other opportunities that were offered at the bilateral level. In conclusion, Chair, we are reiterating that we are initiating this multilateral engagement that focuses on ensuring that the country has got access to secure, affordable, accessible energy, and access to funding, of course, as I've mentioned, technology. We also have the skills to deploy technology-intensive projects to promote localization and job creation as per our industrial policy participation program. We also are embracing African continent and product, the whole issue of South-South cooperation, North-South, inland with our foreign policy objectives. That's that nature.
Ganashna. Where is Elizabeth? Thank you very much. I think that helps us at least at the improvement in terms of the presentation on international issues. Shall we get Professor Korda now from Autism Response? Then we can take questions. Honourable members, this is a practice that has been introduced in the context of or in keeping with the budget review process, whereby the committee is supposed to make their presentations independent of what the department is doing. Hopefully we'll be able to get creative enough in future to do that with the entities as well. Welcome, Professor Gordon. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, parliamentarians and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Yason Gordon, Chairperson of the Auditors Committee of the Department of Energy. This presentation outlines who we are, what we do, our responsibilities, the work done, and it culminates in the evaluation of audited financial statements for the year ended 31st March 2030, and also a review of the Auditor General's management report. We form part of the corporate governance structure within the department that oversees and monitors such activities. With that background, let me now get to the information you see before you. Regarding our background, as an Audit and Risk Committee, we were established in 2010. And we were contracted for a 3-year term, which comes to an end this year, and the department is underway with the new appointments for the new for the following year. At the moment, we consist of three independent members, all chartered accountants. The Audit and Risk Committee discharges all its responsibilities in accordance with its charter. The charter is in line with Section 38.1A and 77 of the PFMA and Treasury Regulations 3.1.13. During 2012-13, the committee held seven meetings. Now one may ask why seven meetings. Well, four were quarterly meetings, two were special meetings to review the draft financial statement before submission to the Auditor General, and then after the audit, the review of the audit's financial statements, and then of course the seventh one was a special one regarding internal audit activities. We also have meetings with the minister once a year. We had a meeting in July last year with the former minister, and this year with the new minister in August. But, apart from that activity, we also attend the budget vote speech of the minister and the strategic planning session of the department, so that we are in tune with what is anticipated or envisaged regarding the business of the department, because we need to have an overall view and understanding of the business of the department in order to fulfill our responsibilities. Regarding the role and responsibilities of the Audit and Risk Committee, it is a non-executive committee in an advisory capacity to the account officer, that is DG. The primary objective of the committee is to advise the accounting officer and senior management of the department in fulfilling their responsibility relating to financial and operating reporting processes, the system of internal controls, governance, risk management, audit process, and monitoring compliance with applicable laws, regulations, relevant prescripts, and directives. As a committee, we do not perform any management functions or assume any management responsibilities. Our responsibilities cover the following. We've got to review the effectiveness of the internal control systems, the effectiveness of the internal audit function, the risk areas of the department's operations to be covered in the scope of internal and external audits, the adequacy, reliability, and accuracy of the financial information provided to management and other users of such information, any accounting and auditing concerns identified as a result of internal and external audits, and compliant with legal and regulatory provisions. Regarding the work done, there are five areas, and this is the first one of the five, that is the internal audit function. The internal function we found is a co-source function. That means there is a full-time internal audit unit within the department. Because of capacity constraints and skills constraints, they find it necessary to co-source other firms to help them. We also reviewed and approved the annual risk-based annual internal audit and three-year rolling plan. Reviewed the internal audit quarterly reports, which monitors the progress against the annual plan. Reviewed the coverage and scope between external and internal audit to avoid duplication of work. Reviewed all audit reports and provided advice on significant issues identified in audit reports and action to be taken on issues raised. The committee, as in the previous year, again registered its concerns with management regarding the adequacy of resources within the internal audit function. And management has taken steps to improve the internal audit capacity in the ensuing financial year. And by that we mean the key improvement was the appointment of a new Chief Audit Executive, who is now leading the way in making sure that the internal audit activity is taken to another level. Risk management is the second key area that we look after or monitor. Quarterly risk management committee meetings are held to ensure that management is to ensure that there is a management and monitoring of the risk management process. With our recommendation, a member of the Audit and Risk Committee was appointed as chairperson of the Risk Management Committee with some impetus. Through internal audit, the Audit and Risk Committee reviewed the risk management process and recommended areas of improvement. It was found necessary to contract a service provider to assist the department in certain risk management processes. Again, this arose due to capacity constraints. The risk management framework, the strategic risk register, the operational risk registers were developed, presented to the committee for review, and then to the risk management committee, and then to the auditor risk committee for consideration and recommendation to the accounting officer. The third area is we review the effectiveness of the systems of internal controls. The DOE has a system of internal controls to provide cost-effective assurance that the department's goals will be economically, effectively and efficiently achieved. Internal audit provided the committee and management of quarterly internal reports which indicate the effectiveness of internal controls. I'm pleased to say that there were no material deficiencies in the system of internal control. On average, management has implemented 92% of the recommendations of the findings by the Auditor General, which is 27 of the 30 findings. So that is quite an achievement. Management is committed to continuously improve the internal control environment. Fourthly, the fourth area, we look at the quality of management reports. These are presented to the Audit and Risk Committee. We are satisfied with the content and quality of the reports. However, there is room for improvement regarding timely submission of reports and review thereof, especially relating to non-financial information. The committee has suggested certain improvements in the process of reporting and that is receiving attention. Management has undertaken to improve the time presentation and content of the required reports as suggested by us. The fifth area we look at is predetermined objectives or the performance of the department. The committee reviewed and discussed this with the accounting officer and the auditor general in the audit of the annual performance information, which included an annual report. There were no material findings by the auditor general, and we concur with these conclusions reached by the auditor general. The committee suggested improvements on the performance information reporting process. Management has undertaken to improve the timely presentation and content of the required reports as suggested by us. And of course, the final area, and this is the culmination of our activities, which is the evaluation of annual financial statements. But before we look at the evaluation of the annual audited financial statements, we also review the quarterly reports. So let's skip the first point. Internal audit assisted us with a high-level review of the unaudited annual financial statements. That means the tough financial statements before they are submitted to the auditor general for report, for audit. Both the draft or unaudited and audited annual financial statements were reviewed and discussed with the accounting officer and the auditor general. I'll come back to the opinion in the last bullet. We reviewed the auditor general's interim management report and also the final management report, and the final one was dated 31st July 2013. And I'm pleased to say that there was nothing untoward in any of those two reports. However, there are certain areas that require improvement, and management has given a commitment to address those. And here I come to the final part. The Audit and Risk Committee concurs with the Auditor General's conclusions on the annual financial statements and of the opinion. The audited financial statements be accepted and read together with the report of the Auditor General. But I think here I must emphasize something. The Auditor General was highly commendable of the department in the improvements of the reporting compared to earlier years. Not that it was not good in the earlier years, but this year was a significant improvement. There were no material misstatements or correction of financial information in the financial statements submitted for audit. And I, as chairman of the audit committee, would also like to commend the department on the hard work done to achieve this. That brings me to the end. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor. Once upon a time in my other world, I once chaired an audit committee. The only experience I had that I was not even popular to the board of directors. I feel for you, Professor Gordon, but I still feel you're too diplomatic. Maybe it was in a hot water, not as compared to the situation.
Fortunate. Okay. Thank you. Whilst I gave a very favorable presentation, it did not come without any bullying and pushing and measuring with management. So So it did come with a lot of pain, not very easily achieved.
It's just that, yes, it falls my acres here. Okay, point taken. The honourable member, there it is. Mr. Manager, that's it. We've had quite a lot. The other thing document, maybe we can actually use it as a reference document. You know, we can from time to time pick up on it, but it's helpful, the members have got it. And as you go through the presentation, as I felt, it links up quite a number of things. Of course, questions and comments, we could pick up issues which from time to time we can refer us to, but we do assign importance to it, particularly that they are very, very crucial areas that are brought up in it. Honourable members, there you are. Well, this is the third year that the department has had a report standing on its own from the PME times. That's from my side. I see quite a number of interesting, you know, developments that come out of the department's efforts to ensure, as they say, sustainable, accessible, and affordable access to energy in all forms. But what's striking is that if you could start with the petroleum area, which indicated, the attempts were done by the department to look for alternatives after the unwarranted and wanton sanctions by the US, Europe, or Iran are supposed to be quite commendable. Remember, at times we couldn't get them because they were running up and down trying to look for alternatives. Of course, the turnaround on application seems to be improving from key, but we always keep a hawk eye on that because I'm sure all honorable members here, one way or another, when they meet a garage owner, people start raising things, honorable this and that, because that's a painful experience for them. Of course, the department has indicated also its own concerns in that area. With regards to nuclear, yes, after Fukushima, if you remember, we did go to check what the department is doing together with ESCOM and the NNR in Quebec. And it's appreciated that the department has been ensuring the high levels of safety, whether it's Quebec and elsewhere. And its engagement with the International Atomic Energy Agency, you know, it's worth noting as well. Hopefully at some page it is related to what which is below us will ultimately find its way to, through the cabinet to the committee. I saw in some of the documents here the reference to 2029 on the national, on the new nuclear bill program. Surely you have to share with us why is the shift now on the day. I hope I saw it correctly because it was just a fleeting reading. INEP has got it good and bad. I suppose what we'll see is something we need to give some more space and time to look at it. Everybody is very keen on INEP. We know the municipalities, but we will not let up in putting pressure. And as they have said now, we've started to know either we're putting pressure on the department itself, but we also are putting pressure on your cocktail, MISA, and others, you know, your SALGA, because we don't want to be unfair and say we are uneasy, you know, about the sluggishness. Because if you look at even the allocation, the amount allocated to municipalities is quite sizable. It's just slightly less than ESCOM, but we're supposed to be, I mean, my assumption is
and expectations have arose from everyone that municipalities should actually be running with the ball, rolling out and improving their rollout in case, you know, on to our water heaters. And then in March, unfortunately, with high pressure for our water heaters, particularly the fact that they would make a sizable impact on energy efficiency, I suppose. When it comes to Adam, it's a good and slow start, but unfortunately, it has changed because the pressure is growing and the infrastructure rehabilitation is needed, like yesterday. It's just one of these unfortunate environments whereby the department is supposed to provide leadership in the context of a number of other players and members, because it's not just the department only that would have to drive this. Of course, the money comes from the National Treasury. I mean, personally, I'm very reluctant acceptor of the fact that we only have 9 municipalities, you know, 2 local and 9. And 2 metro and 9 locals, something like that. I wish it could be more. We want to reduce the backlog to 15 billion by next year. I'm not sure whether we'll be able to reach that if you look at what the report says. In terms of clean energy, I really hope that we'll be able to resolve localization issues so that the multiplication of the rollout, you know, gets better day by day. That's an area that has a number of spin-offs, but once again, I think we do appreciate what the department has done, exceeding some of the target times. However, once again, let's make sure that we draw lessons as to how we also address the high pressure sector as well. IDPs, honourable members, I think we've probably made a mere statement on IDPs as to how the department has been achieved in that. I mean, I'm a personal witness when interacting with other countries as well as to how they admire South Africa in this area. Sometimes I just look at them and because I come back and say I'm one of the people who put pressure on the department and everyone that you guys do some more. And in other countries, you know, they say, well, they make references to South Africa, time and I see the international, they are making reference in one of the platforms which I shared with Asmatech in Doha. And that's one of the references I'm making, whereby the participants, they were really appreciative of what South Africa is doing. With regard to biofuels, yes, the progress that is deleted. I hope the momentum will be maintained because it will be one of the areas that may probably assist in access to. Can you try a lot? That's every button. Team Energy, we were not impressed about your service delivery improvement in the past. Unfortunately, the auditing, you know, exposed that, but it seems there is belated progress on that. That would, but still, as a comment, we haven't heard anything in what you are saying in terms of how we are improving on gas industry, on rural energy, if I can use that term. But if you look at the program of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, there's a very strong component there about how they would like to get energization of their rural program. The liquid fuel charter, now that the amendments have been promulgated, the regional offices will always keep on raising that because it's very important. In fact, when I was listening to JT on the rollout and things, one of the things I noted was we need their help to get some of the parks rolled over to ensure that we have proper regional offices, because the other area that's linked to this is used to staffing challenges as well. Because from outside, you maintain very strongly, or I personally, I'm very strong about the fact that some of the activities must devolve to regional offices to ensure that services are improved. Of course, there are some which can be actually located to national. ICT, yes, connectivity is a tool, but what about the software? These days, service delivery can be improved a lot with the various software. I haven't heard of that coming from the department. I mean, one of the things is to get much information as possible on consumption, on demand, on everything, and the ICT can do a lot in that. Surely you could have done better in that area. And that links to sharing information. We hear you talk of new household electrification strategy. I don't remember, but I don't remember the department talking of even a copy of that. And it would be helpful. I mean, electronically, you can just drop it without sharing hard copies. The same with black policies, so that we can conduct oversight on things that we had. We can be observers, it doesn't matter, but it's just to know. From time to time, we've had updates on the public participation programs, but when we get them in a consolidated form, it's really an effort that is quite appreciated. And as I said, I thought you only focused on electrification issues. It's quite diverse, so highly appreciated. But let's look at an impact assessment. Let's do some impact assessment as well. How much confidence is that resulting on beneficiaries? I'm not saying that the poor people where you go to townships or villages, but also on the business sector as well, because we engage with them. I suppose that's part of the participation program. SOE, very good tools to ensure delivery. Once again, unfortunately, the internal oversight is to come in, and we shall not let up, unfortunately, on this one until it improves, because the report actually shows that there's been related progress, if I can say, on this area once again. We're looking forward to staff coming up with this progress update on restructuring. It has been taking place for some time, that's good. And one other thing worth noting when it comes to staff, staff as well as department, is the creation of the new forums, which I'm sure is done out of experience, to ensure synergy and coordination, the forum for chairs, the forum for CEOs, the forum for CFOs as well. On finance, still supervision of electrification transfers is something our members will comment on it. It's just an area which would always have a hawk's eye on it. In fact, if I can throw something in here, municipalities work once funds are received, but the Department of Energy pays once work is done. Do I get it correctly, and how is that reconciled? Do MOUs or MOA address that, that kind of question? You said with regard to energy regulation, everything was done 100%, but I see in terms of expenditure, there are a couple of thousands that I assume have been saved. Does that imply efficient employment of resources? Because if that's the situation, then we would start saying then Mashabalala, let's look at other programs as well. Why don't they say 100% but still there are a couple of parts that have been saved? Because it's honorable, Master, nothing impossible to say we've done 100% of our work but we still have funds. It doesn't mean we've been efficient. I'm throwing that to stand it to you, Mrs. Neelit, DG, and the two ministers, that if that's the case with the energy regulation, let's start seeing that with other programs as well. To do 100% or to do 90% with less fun, just to be efficient. Honourable members, I think it's worth noting and commending the department once again on the pattern of audit findings, that 7, 8, 17. I hope for 2013-14 it will go down to zero. I know this Mama Chet is tough, but give it a try. I mean, bring it down by almost half. Must have been quite a fit. And also the 92% achievement is reported to the Auditor General. The recommendation is good. But of interest is the rollover, you see. Because I thought there was a couple of requests for rollover in some of those areas which were worth a positive response by National Treasury. I know it's not you, National Treasury, but if you could just elaborate, why were those disrespected, not responded to? Lastly, it's in regards to international. One of numbers, on international issues, we make focus on providing power or energy to our country advocate. But the thing is, we are quite influenced by international environment, whether it's regional or continental. The Grand Inga, for example, we know how we've been forced to miss Mr. Apani time and again because he's been frequenting Kinshasa. We hope out of the big summit, a lot positive will come out of that with our big partner. We've observed, I know I'm one of the witnesses on the energy ministers in Africa activities. An area that needs to be strengthened. We recently had a joint workshop with parliamentarians in August. The report will still be coming. And that was triggered by nothing else, amongst other things, but the intensive engagement amongst energy ministers in Africa. The question was, what are the parliamentarians doing? So, don't think you don't influence us. SAE-EU partnership, the start of power pooling, which is very, very important, because if there's growth, there must be power, and a few other international platforms. But with regards to international, we need to get in future reports about lessons learned and what impact that has done. Because there's a whole list of agreements, there's a whole list of engagements, they are listed there. But still, can you share with us what impact have they done to your capacity, to building partnership, and to sharing information? For now, that's all from my side. I think it's quite a balanced sport, it's quite a balanced performance, but unfortunately, we will not let down our guard. We'll maintain our eye to the department and ensure that it improves from time to time. Other members, any questions, comments? Yes,
sir.
Let's have the first round of questions. Is it fine just to have two questions per member? Take a break and give them time to... Okay, let's vote. Okay, let's take a break. Once again, thanks to the department for the presentation. However, now it's time for questions and comments. Honourable members, are you ready? Honourable.
Honorable Mato, Honorable Smale, Honorable Trading, Prof. Honorable Tradeve, Nomfood.
Thank you, Chairperson. For the first round, I just want to deal with the issues around the financial statement and ask all my questions to Ms. Chetty. Then one will come back later to deal with the policy issues. Chairperson, I would want to refer Ms. Chetty, and I'll have to proceed through the questions quite rapidly. The first question will be on page 241, around the statement on contingent liabilities. There is a claim of 470,000 against the department, and in your notes you indicate that this claim mainly is pertaining to alleged breach of contract and alleged potential constructive obligations. Can you give us more background to that? The next question would be the guarantee that you offered Nexa of 20 million rand, roughly, for a bank facility. My question is, why would Nexa need 20 million rand facility? I mean, the guarantee from you, couldn't they do it from their balance sheet? The next question would be page 222. Around environmental rehabilitation liability, is around the past strategic nuclear facilities. It increased, and I mean the background to it is clearly explained to partly on your notes. It increased from 1.7 billion to 3.7. So I just want to find out what led to this doubling of of the liability. The next question, Chairperson, to the CFO, is page 240. You down a loan to Kahora Basa from 347 million to 1 million to 100. Can you provide us background what led to the decision to write down the loan from 347 million to 1 rand. Chairperson, the next set of questions to Ms. Chetty, I think that should be my last, if I haven't forgotten anything, it would be the amount you surrendered 387 million rand, which was from EDIA Hair Holdings, which was meant for Adam. You surrendered that money to the National Treasury. My question is, you needed the money for Adam problem. Why couldn't you make an arrangement with the National Treasury? I don't know how, but that the money should also be, through other process that I don't understand, should be returned for the Adam problem. Chairperson, I think that should be all to Ms. Chetty, and the last one would be to Ms. Chetty, is 195, page 195 on the procurement. You say that the procurement of IT equipment for a total of 923,000 could not be finalized due to non-delivery by the supplier. Can you give us background to that? So, Chairperson, that would be all for Ms. Chetty, and I'll ask the other policy question later.
I'm just going to take Honorable Smiler's place now, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to do a hit and run, if that's okay. I just want to put a few questions forward, but I do need to go to another meeting, but my colleague will get the answers for me. Just a couple of questions. I mean, they're similar to the kind of questions I put yesterday, but yesterday I was putting it to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, whereas I actually think they need to be put to the actual department, because you know the ins and outs of it. The issues are around, I mean, it's already been alluded to. I mean, I think the Adam program, I mean, we're talking about 320 million rand being put towards it, whereas we've got a backlog of about 35 billion rand. Now, what was said yesterday was that since the abandonment of the Reds, that there has been investment by municipalities back into their electricity infrastructure at a municipal level. I don't know if that is exactly true, but I think what is critical for us is to know whether in the long term, are we set up for dealing with the backlog and for ensuring that municipalities are in fact investing in the municipal grid. So I'd just be interested to hear whether you think we are breaking the back of this or whether in fact we need a complete institutional reform in order to get the right incentive structures in order to see this investment into the municipal grid. So I'd just be interested to hear your thoughts around that. The solar water heaters, I mean, according to my figures, it looks like we're doing on average about 100,000 solar water heaters a year. So we've got a cumulative total of just over 300,000 now. I'm not sure what percentage is low water, and I've made those points, I mean, low pressure, and I've made those points before, that we really need to put the emphasis now onto high pressure. And I've looked at your standard offer. Now, the standard offer seems to be a kind of revision of what is already being offered by Eskom in terms of a rebate system. Whereas, in fact, that clearly is not creating enough of a market in the particularly the high pressure solar water heater market. Clearly we need a bit of a rethink there, because if we're going to only have 100,000 delivered every year, we're going to be way off the target of a million solar water heaters. And so clearly we need a rethink here, and we must find a way of unlocking this. Is it a case of trying to provide the upfront financing for households and then get households to pay back on a monthly basis? Is it something else? We need to break this, and I just don't get the sense that we're on top of this, that we've actually rethought this idea and actually come up with a model that can actually see a progressive realization of solar water heaters. Then on energy efficiency, I can't remember what the target was yesterday, but I thought it was about 9 terawatt hours that was mentioned by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation as a target that was set for 2014. And I see here in the annual report it talks about 2.25 terawatt hours. So either way, I think that we've been falling far short of our target around energy efficiency, and this is a huge concern to me, and I'm just interested to hear what we're going to do to reach that. So those two things are critical. And then just when I look at the international visits, I mean, I think international visits give us a sense of what the priorities of the department is to some extent in terms of places we visit. I do see we get to Russia a lot, and we are invited in Rotterdam for international visits, so that would give me an indication of where we're going there. But the major point I want to make around this is that I've not seen any kind of bilaterals or visits to countries such as Mozambique or Tanzania. And the problem there is that we seem to be missing out on the massive gas boom that is coming from the finance sector, and we really need to start the negotiations if we are looking at gas playing a role in terms of our future energy economy. And I'm just interested to hear why we haven't put some focus on that. I'll leave it there, Chair, and hand over to my colleague. Thanks.
Chair, if I may. Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, let me start off with the finance section. It is clear that when we do look at the transfers of subsidies to municipalities, in the way that it's being done, that we're not getting the outcomes that we should be getting. I'm trying to understand that the 50,620 connections that was done by municipalities, the outcome of the municipalities under the ENAP program has only materialized 39% of it. So we've only utilized 470 million and of the possible 1.15. Are the actual outcomes also then being affected? Is because the 50, would that be less or would that have been more? I'm just trying to understand what the effect is on the outcome. I was also trying to, within your reporting system, trying to pick up on the fund transfer to Eskom of the 1.85 billion, on what the actual expenditure of that would have been. If you've maybe got any indication, I know it's not for you, but it's part of the monies that are transferred, because it comes back over towards the oversight on the department side to make sure that the entities are actually being held accountable for monies being spent. From your side, I did pick up that on the one positive side, that we have seen a deficit going to a positive from the SNU corporate and SEF,
which we saw the one previous balance here from 100 million or just 100 million to 1.9 billion rand, is that I'm trying to understand what was the major shift for going from a negative of 100 to 1.9 billion within a 1 year. I know it could be the requirement of assets or capital injections by that, but it is a big jump within one financial year. And maybe we can talk about it. If we can't talk about it, I will leave that to the subsidiaries when they are come next week or the week after when they do come. I know when they're coming, but we can deal with that. I'm not too concerned about that thing. What I do want to understand is from a department's point of view. We have seen, and we will see that tomorrow, we have seen subsidiary or entities making major decisions around national key points. And one of those is the decommissioning of the 6 Saldanha tanks. And it is a national key point. And with a national key point, I would want to understand, did the two ministerial departments have discussions in order in going towards that way or agreeing that decommissioning can be taking place? I just need to understand that. You made a lot of reference about HR HR concerns that you had. We had the department's accounts for 62 different cases that was taken up against various number of offences, misconduct, disciplinary hearings that took place. 62 of those. That's on page 1.1. But only 7 cases were being dealt with, whereby only one actually went to a dismissal. So if I look at that, it is about 12% of your workforce that actually, of the 500 and whatever you've got, actually transgressed in one way or another. And I'm just trying to understand why only 10%, why 62 to 7 that could be dealt with, and that's slow progress, and why only one dismissal? Because clearly your code of ethics makes provision for the various types of misconduct, and I'm just trying to understand why is the department so lenient on that. Last year I also spoke about the department's oversight role over various other entities, how does DOE now still have you got a office or a task team within your department now that actually oversees transfers of funds to actual entities and looking at the outcome of those? Not just the transfer, but are we actually getting our money worth at the end of the day? I don't want to talk about the other entities' reports, but there has been some serious transgressions of those other entities of that you are holding company of. And I'm trying to understand what is your role in making sure that those transgressions are being looked at, are being addressed, and those people are actually being accountable of. I'll go second round now, okay. Thank you.
Rob. Thank you, sir. Just two short ones to assist us. On slide 10. No, it's slide 12. Organizational environment. I did a few calculations here. Just want to check if my understanding is well. It is slide 12 on environmental organizational environment. The staff complement for the year was total 818 approved books, 556 funded and filled with 56 interns. I'm trying to interpret that here and see if it means what I think it is. That means of the 818, 556 were filled. Does that mean the 262, if you take away the interns, 56, the 206 are vacant, so it's a ghost. Let me take you to slide 14. Slide 14. I used my standard strict arithmetic there. It could not, sometimes it could not be necessarily correct. I was just checking the ESCOM connections out of 1.8 was 121. The municipalities of 1.15 was 50. I just checked, took that 1.1 and gave it to ESCOM. And if ESCOM used that, they would have made 74,000 connections. As against the 50 by the municipalities. I'm just thinking, well, what could be this the difference? What is it that makes these municipalities to have this low production? Maybe on that question you'll say more about why we have those vacancies. Can I go to the reverse? On slide 10 of Ms. Chetty, your slide 10. Yeah, I think that slide 10 to me, it is showing this real problem of strategic plans not aligned to the budget. Where you have not achieved 6 and only achieved 3 out of 9, but the 3 that you have achieved have used 98%. I'm trying to get my mind around that. To start with, what is it? What is the difficulty in linking strategic plans with budget? And what is our plan for that? Because to me, it seems looks so abnormal. Is it after 3 years, are we saying, having been there for 3 years, we just can't have strategic plan that talk to budget? If by now we don't, what would it take us to get there? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just thinking of Mama who's standing for the DG there. It's in the hot seat. Well, Chair, let me start by probably engaging on the issue of slide 6, where it speaks about the parts of the safety actions that they plan from the Fukushima incidents. My also issue is that how far have they went in terms of educating the community about the safety action plan? Because recently in one of our forum meetings, it has, you know, came out there that some of the communities, I think they were not also engaged or educated in terms of these escape plans, if anything of that kind can happen. Because once the department, my view is that once the department have done something has happened and they try to put some precaution measure, they should be able also to educate the community around those areas. I'm trying to check whether how far is the department went in terms of educating the community around there. The other issue in terms of the solar water heaters, that up to date they've already achieved about 350,000 installation. The water general yesterday said, in terms of the whole assessment, it seems like they won't be able to reach the expected target, which is 1 million solar water heaters. And if I remember correctly, last year, it was also highlighted by the department that they are on track in terms of ensuring that these solar heaters are being implemented. In 2011, also it was engaged collectively with the CEF that they're going to meet the targets. Let me just get a clarity whether is the audit general assessment correct when you say you won't be able to meet the expected timeline of installing those 1 million slicers? And what are the challenges? Is it because of the budget or is it because of the capacity? What are the challenges exactly? Why can't we be able to meet those particular targets? The other issue. Okay. Oh, the other issue, Chair, I'm trying also to understand in terms of the according to the Auditor General's point of view is that the department is failing to meet the targeted time. Can they off submitting the documents off within a period of 2 months? What is the challenge in terms of that? Because they've mentioned that they've broken the Section 51B of the BFMA. That means that they couldn't be able to submit all documents in the expected time. And in terms of the Section 84 and 85 of BFMA, he states that if the accounting officer fails to submit, there should be penalties that should be given to. My question is that if you can be able to get a clarity whether does the department also doing this, because in terms of the Auditor General's point of view, in terms of this other chart that was saying, he was saying it was a repetitive tendencies that the department submit documents late. And this really says that still means the department doesn't change or improve in terms of its correcting measures. Once you get a clarity, what should happen if, you know, such kind of thing also continue to happen? Because we are saying here, we understand that the department, it was established new and everything, systems were not in order, but you believe that afterwards, you know, the training is moving smoothly, so that you can be able to assess that in the following financial year, you should not find such kind of challenges again. Because I guarantee myself, I'm coming back in Parliament, and I'll be in this political committee, I'll be watching, following you up, whether you do your work accordingly as you promised. Thank you, Chair.
Confidence appreciated. Although some of us are not.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my first question is on slide six about the seven pilot municipalities and two metros. Can you please tell us which municipalities are they, so that we must know if they are not going to act like the red one. The next is on slide 9. I'm also on the 350,000 installations. It says to date, the program has achieved over 350 installations. Why can't you come up with a direct number, not just over 350, so that you can also measure and see if by the end of next year or March next year, at least where you are going to be. On slide 10, It's about the bidders have committed approximately 1 billion to spend on women-owned supply business. I just wanted to know how far are they now with helping those women, or those women working, how far are they? On slide 12, the funded and filled post there with the intent of 56. My question is, what's going to happen to those intents? Is the department going to absorb those intents or what? Thank you, sir.
A bit from me, I'm back again. Slide 10, page 5, on the annual financial statement. That's an interesting observation there, is that the majority, once the majority of planned targets is not achieved, but the majority of the funds have either been spent or allocated. What's the how that asymmetry explained? Just a few other areas. The transformation of the liquid fuel sector is quite crucial and has always been a sore point. But focus here is on the downstream to an extent. Of course, we know that generally there is to be an uncommon stake of 25% to black-owned companies. And the one company, there's only one that has done that, is Total. Anyway, just as a background, my question is, how far has the department gone in the transformation of the downstream and, sector, downstream in particular? But linked to this is the storage area, which has always been a so-called. How has the department ensured that there is investment in associated infrastructure such as the storage facilities? Now let's look at international. One of the projects that has been highlighted was the Gandhi-Indira Haitham project. Quite commended. But can the department share with us any other activities in other African countries and how they'll benefit us? Non-grid connections, that's another area. I think that's an area that I missed out, concessionaires. The department has always been making misses in this area. I trust and hope those will come back, like Honorable Khadir, who will strongly focus on this area, the non-grid connections. And specifically, what the aspects is in the outside, but the non-grid, there are challenges that have been identified. Needless to go through them. But what we'd like to do, you know, is that has the department investigated the causes of the challenges, and what has been done hitherto? At some stage, I think it was last year, this committee hosted a meeting with the other portfolios, two portfolios committees. One was labor, the other one was women, children, and people with disabilities, to address common issues. And there were a couple of commitments that were done.
if you could update us on that. The other area is the in terms of the human resource capacity. I hope my calculations there, sometimes since I have talked in mathematics, that almost 50% of the staff, current staff, is in the program one, that's administration, and others, energy policy and planning, 67, regulation on 20, electrification, 73, nuclear, 22. Can the department share with us the rationale for this? The bulk, almost 50% being in administration, or are we accurate to what seems to be what one is speaking out to? Let's hand over to the department for now.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to start with the comments that the Chair made before the break, and to say we've taken note of your of the concerns and requests that have been made in terms of your international coordination on the information that is required, and also the area where you've requested SOE oversight with staff. In terms of that, I think that will be appropriately covered by the third presentation tomorrow. On the questions that have been asked, I'll go through some of the questions that I asked my colleagues to identify their areas of responsibility and their corresponding questions to that. Starting with the question of the Kahora bus alone, which has been written down to one rent. The Kahora bus alone, which was between South Africa and Mozambique, it's one of the oldest loans that we had when we were still in the Department of Minerals and Energy. I think it was signed in 1960-something, as far back as that. In early 2000, when I joined the department, the topic there between the department and the Auditor General was that we have a loan which had almost doubled in value in terms of the interest, which was unfortunately also causing havoc to our balance sheet because it was skewing our balance sheet. So the agreement was that because politically, we still needed to utilize that loan as some kind of a political leverage. We had to keep it in the books, number one. And secondly, it requires renegotiation between the two countries to say that, can you pay or can you not pay? And at that time, it was clear they couldn't. Because that time, we used to audit, we were co-auditors of the project together with the Portuguese. With the Portuguese government, and there was no way that they could search during the time of the war and everything else. There was no way they could pay it. So the agreement then between the department and the Auditor General was that we'll keep it in our books at one rand value, paying it to keep it alive so that it doesn't fall off the books. But like I'm saying, it is still needed it as a country, as a political leverage. So that's why it's sitting as one rand. So until such time that they've come together as government, to say now what is are we negotiating our terms of repayment or are we finding another way of you repaying the loan is going to stay in our books as one rent. The other issue I'd like to address is the issue of stress bands that do speak to the budget. In terms of when you read the slides that talk to targets and budget, I'll kindly request that the honourable members look also further into saying that which targets were not met. Because if you compare figures in terms of five targets were not met and then you compare it to the money, some of the targets are not on expense-based. They're supposed to be seen by employees for them to be achieved and ticked off as achieved. So most of the stuff that is left that was undone at the end of the year, they did not have any specific financial implication. It was something that we had to do, and we did not achieve to do that. So there was no specific money attached to that particular target. That's why we've got this juncture. If you look at special programs, for instance, Dr. Barnard might like to explain later. If you look at that, the things that they needed to do as a branch, and because they started a bit late into the year,
the plot was established a bit late into the year. That's why they could not do specific things. So it had nothing to do with the budget. There was the budget that we were dealing with was the INEP budget and other budget that were specific, and those have been catered for in the expenditure that has been identified as achieved. The issue of late submissions from the Auditor General, yes, we had one or two quarters where we have presented our information late in terms of the date. But the problem with the term of in terms of the date here is that we have two documents that have been sent out by National Treasury to departments. One talks about the framework for the compilation of the quarterly reports and the annual report and the targets there. And then we also got another document also released by National Treasury in terms of the guidelines into the preparation of this document. The two documents are talking about two different numbers. One speaks of the 30 days after the end of the quarter, one speaks of the 60 days after the end of the quarter. So one talks about 1 month, other talks about 2 months. So in the department, you've been implementing the 60 days, which the National Treasury does not believe is the right interpretation of what that is where the problem has been. So we've done, after all this, we asked the National Treasury to give us this year, Auditor General, to give us this year, because we never had any problems from National Treasury. They've never complained about anything. So we're under the impression that we've interpreted it correctly. So we asked the Auditor General to actually tell the department what do they expect to see with the audit in conjunction with National Treasury. So they did come back to us last month to say no. They've agreed now that 30 days we're talking about is 30 days of the preparation of the information, which means in 30 days we must have information which can then be distributed to either your audit committees, the DG, the minister, and then post that in terms of what you would like to do with that information, that's something else. But the 30 days means if anyone asks for information in 30 days, 30 days after the end of the quarter, you must have that information, which unfortunately in the past the department we did not have in most cases. So that is where the problem has been. Just want to see if there's anything that I have to talk about. Deputy Chair, there's a question that you made on joint committees with Labour, and I looked around here and everybody was shaking their hands. I don't think anyone is clear about that question.
I have a set of questions. There are 16 of them. I won't read all of them. I'll just share the document with you.
Okay.
We'll handle it. I know very well. We're in this very room, the 475. The committee secretary is concurring with me.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we're looking at was the issues of disability.
Mm-hmm.
I remember raising particularly from the Department of Labor, they have built this project of actress for the disabled and the extent to which we're binding to. But there were a couple of other things that were raised also by the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities as to how they monitor issues around employment equity vis-a-vis disabled people in particular. It was a new issue to quite an extent, but I remember pretty well there was a commitment. We'll draw the minutes and share that with you, but we need to know. I want pressure for response now. You can skip it. Okay.
Well, maybe it related to the composition of the staff complement in relation to people with disabilities, and we committed that we will embark on a program to ensure that we bring people with disabilities on board. We did go out to secure funding, and we did come up with a program, actually a learnership that targets persons with disabilities, that we expose them to the business of the department so that at the end of the day they can be placed within the relevant structures within the department. That program, that learnership is currently running. We have deployed learners in the department, and a number of them are persons with disabilities. The program is currently running.
Okay.
thanks for now, but we would need a little bit more than that in writing. As I say, I'll share this 2 pages with you. Because one of the things we'd like to know is the extent to which you did engage with the other departments to see how you can change the work on this. I could see it, you talking internally what you have done. But there's more than that in our expectations. We'll share also the minutes with you so that we can refer to it. Thanks, Mona.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Can I ask then, I'll start with Mr. Cyril behind me, just to briefly go through international relations questions, followed by Mr. Mbambo, on the nuclear side, then Dr. Barnett, and then the CFO, and then I think we've got some extra questions on the, we'll take the sequence. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, there are 3 questions in this round that have been directed to us on the international relations front. First being the real priorities in this endeavor. I would like to respond by saying that our priorities are straightforwardly informed by the IRP 2010, which focused renewable energy area to be given more attention. Hence, in our presentation, if you go to the multilateral, you'll find that most of the engagements were in the clean energy space. The second question was that why are we not engaging and taking opportunities on areas such as the booming of the shale gas, for example, in West Africa, in the East Africa languages. I think the Honourable Member is right. We are at the official level. We have begun doing some work with our counterparts at site. But Honourable Chairperson will concur with me that engagements such as these are normally best executed when there is a government-to-government relations underwritten by cooperation agreements, because there's a lot of resources, there's a lot of time that are committed into this. So ours is to first establish government-to-government relations that will translate into our SOEs as the anchors of these projects to take advantage of that. But maybe just to extend it a bit to say that Chairperson, opportunities, market opportunities by South African companies elsewhere are mainly determined by their rationale as whether those opportunities are making economic sense to them. One such example which Honourable Member is quite right is what is the opportunity created by the booming of the shale gas in the United States, for an example. U.S. normal lifting the amount of gas from Angola and Nigeria. What is that South Africa is doing to take opportunity for us for the importation of gas? I think that question was quite interesting and important from our side.
Just before you proceed, I'm not looking at your document, but you're saying that government-to-government relations and agreements create a conducive environment for energy trade. Fair enough. I'm not sure with Tanzania, 100 members, but I'm sure with Mozambique, we do have some informal. So, immediately on that, that's key. Yeah. So the question is still outstanding. Why is the department or government trying to fit on Mozambique? Because the ENI, the Italian company, Anadarko's, are already busting in Mozambique. They've taken quite a big chunk in exploration and other things. You know, I was at a breakfast meeting of SAO at the Oil and Gas Alliance, whereby that was articulated. So the question is stands. And one other question, you're saying companies look at markets and get appetite. We're not a company or a government. We're looking at sustainable supply of affordable energy. You see? So whether companies do whatever, they always look at government as well to see if government is creating that conducive environment. The oil majors were the first one to jump out of Iran, isn't it?
when Iran was sanctioned. And the government as government reluctantly conceded because we were under pressure. Because it's a political issue. We cannot be pressurized by another government to do things. But unfortunately, the reality is there. I'm just giving an example. So please, as we move along, always make a distinction between the interest of companies whose bottom line is profit and the interest of a government on behalf of the interest of any nation. Thank you.
Chair, I would like Mr. Mkhize to expand on the gas issue. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just want to clarify that when it comes to the issue of the gas in Mozambique, there is a commission that we have. Unfortunately, we do have the participation of our commissioner, our company, Patrick Say, but unfortunately they were not successful in terms of the wells that the ones were looking at. Because the was also participating in one that was not successful in terms of our companies here. When it comes to those companies, they participated in the bidding rounds that are just open to all the oil companies, and then that's how it gets to those fields. And then in doing the exploration, then they do those discoveries, which in the Rovuma Basin are estimated around 150 trillion cubic feet. We are still engaged with the Mozambicans in terms of facilitating the discussions so that we can be able to position ourselves to get some of that gas being used in the country, which is still going to be done via the companies that are in South Africa. PetroSA has also, I think recently, also had a field that they are looking at in discussion with the Mozambican counterparts. I think there is some progress in that regard. We are going to have the meeting with our Mozambican counterparts in terms of the gas commission. It's scheduled for the 28th of November in Mozambique. Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, because it clearly indicates that there were some discussions taking place at some point or another, but it doesn't reflect in your report on some of those things. That's, you know, that's bullet point number one. The dragging of South African, of SA, and its, I don't want to say companies, but in order to acquire a stake in those gas fields, or because some of those transactions has already changed hands multiple times. The original, when the block was fine, Jubilee block, and then percentages of those stakes also transferred hands from one company to another company. My concern is that if we as a country are not seriously looking at diversifying the energy mix, and I'm not just talking about the lights, but I'm also talking about DTL, then we will miss the boat. And if you look at the serious investments that, like one of our companies, Sasol, has just made in America, those are the investments. If we play our cards right, those are the investments that could have happened at home, and we could have benefited to some of those things. And I'm just, Chairperson, that is why if we don't push for those discussions to take place, and like we said, the X percentage of energy has got to be green, X percent of biofuels must be into the blending mix, and we're not looking at that section of the energy, then going ahead further, that is our concern, and I think that must be stressed, Chair, that we are going to miss the button.
It can be we honour to them, smart. Because I'm going to differ with you. Who wants to say we, maybe will pick up this committee, said, no way. I'm not going to allow that. Because we've got a very well-structured IRP, not so? So we get guided in how we invest and look at the sources through that IRP. The reason why there's a lot of Rosatom in South Korea and France is because of the 9.6 gigawatts nuclear energy, isn't it? The reason why we have a few other things, those are very much lateral, Irena,
even in the energy ministerial things and others, is because we're trying to ensure that we work on the renewable energy side. So the story goes on. I'm sure Sister Andy and Kabasela, the emphasis you take is that we really would like to see more effort, and intensified effort, on gas. It's in the keeping of what the pressure has been putting on you people, that ensure that the gas industry is transformed. Because we don't only look at transforming the gas industry here, infrastructure, storage, you know, market penetration. You also link that with your acquisition of the source itself, which is, as we claim here, it's around the corner, it's Mozambique, it's Tanzania. We hear and take note of the efforts that have been made. But I must say the emphasis is how we wish that could have been doubled or tripled. Let's leave it at that, because it's water under the bridge. As I said in my opening remarks, that when we look at past performance, it's a platform to plan and improve into the future. Of course, we still have Petrosa to come and engage with us, because it says that cutting edge as well in terms of driving this area, or amongst you know, the agencies that we use. But of course, take into account that it's always the government, through the Department of Energy, that creates the context and the conducive environment for your Petrosa and your Sasols to do business, particularly within the continent.
Okay, thanks, Chair. We will continue to increase our endeavors in this regard, because when we all discussed with the Mozambicans, they said what they have is the royalty gas that we can only look at, because the rest is now belonging to these companies. And also, we have also tried to also have engagement with the companies themselves, facilitating that process through companies. We have even had some discussion internally with all the companies that make up because commission as we go to engage our Mozambican counterparts. We will do exactly as you are saying and provide feedback.
See, sorry, Honourable. See, the emphasis is lessons learned. How do we get bitten by companies from overseas when Mozambique is around the country which has long deep-seated roots or deep-seated relations with us? No, don't answer. Don't be pressurized. Just say, I said lessons learned. How come can somebody all the way up there can beat us to our neighbor who has very strong relations with us? Okay, I'll allow you to respond. I don't know what I do. Okay, I'll allow you to respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think as a country, we don't have a policy that unlike many other countries, that subsidizes its companies to go into business offshore. And if you look at most of...
Catch you there. I'm sorry, I'm going to be blunt. I know more than you do. I know why I'm asking. It's not with due respect. You still have a lot to learn, please. Then let's proceed. I know we'll talk later. I don't think you understand what I was trying to... The message I was trying to give. There's still a lot many years we have to learn in this field. It's not just a symbol and black and white as we're trying to say. I'm really sorry to catch you. We have little time. Yeah, Kubela Lavista. Whoever was going to speak.
Thank you, Jefferson. The question was asked to say, after the Fukushima, what has the department done in regard to taking the lessons learned from the Fukushima accident? And we've highlighted that the government completed the national safety plan in line with the IAEA safety plan. And this plan is now being implemented with a number of stakeholders that are involved. And these include the operators like Eskom, NEXA, the National Nuclear Regulator, and the ISHA got the various roles. And then one of the matters that we need to highlight, which these stakeholders have got the role, is that the operators, in terms of their licensing requirements, are required to develop their own emergency plans, which they then have to execute. And this is an area that's being monitored by the national nuclear regulator. And as part of that, they even need that around the nuclear installations, the communities that reside in those areas, the operator engage with them in the way of establishing the public safety information forums, whereby the operator then find an opportunity to engage with the public members in terms of informing the members of the public what is happening at the operation and what happens in case of an emergency, and also get to get concerns that are raised by members of the public, and these get resolved at those forums. And also, as part of the National Nuclear Regulator process, they monitor the implementation of the emergency preparedness plans for these nuclear installations. And there will be the emergency exercises that get undertaken, and in doing those exercises, emergency preparedness exercises, the operator involves the stakeholders within the area in making sure that there is an understanding and also an assurance of the level of preparedness should there be an emergency exercise. And there are structures that then support and make sure that there is a sharing of information. I think that's what I just needed to share with regard to what has the department done, and the department is participate in these emergency exercises that get executed by the operator, monitored by the National Nuclear Regulator. And these are done at Nexa, these are done at Eskom at Quebec Nuclear Power Station, at frequencies that are determined by the National Nuclear Regulator. But the public safety information forum, they take place at shorter frequencies, because that's where issues to discuss with the stakeholders. Thank you, Chairman. Chairman.
Through you, Chairman, I'm reading this thing because I think Odette was also there. He failed to respond to this thing because some of the members of the community around Kuwait were in that stakeholders meeting, whom said there was no engagement with them or any educational or any education for them to be aware of any exit strategy around the issue of nuclear there, if any incident of Fukushima can occur. So I'm saying you must be able to work around that around that sector and ensure that you clear all the loopholes. Because if ever there are people who claim that they've not been engaged, that means we haven't done enough engagement with the stakeholders.
If I remember well, people, stakeholder engagement was one of the things highlighted by the Department on nuclear issues. You've done it at state defense, né? But now we're talking about an existing facility, because state spend is about the future rebuild. But now, are you Kungani saying that, but then, let's say if they mean, so then what about it? You know, if people are saying that, does that mean nothing has ever been done, or little has been done, or, you know, whatever, you know. There's Eskom. Can I allow Eskom to respond?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, honorable members, there is a standing committee that sits twice a month. It's standing. Every 2 weeks, a standing committee sits. these issues, this issue of evacuation. I remember when I last set up the meeting last year, they were fine-tuning areas of concern from the government, but it has been there for the debate around 5 years from last year on the evacuation, and it was reinforced, especially after Fukushima. You know, so there's a collective standing committee that sits twice a month. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. That's for the benefit, I'm sure, or most of us do, but that's Mr. Mbunelo from ESCOM. He's in parliamentary liaison office. However, Babu Mbunelo, can you share with us who is in that committee?
Chair, I think I'll provide writing the list of stakeholders. And outside ESCOM, it's not an ESCOM, it's chaired by an outsider, and the stakeholders from City of Cape Town up until Atlantis, different stakeholders. I'll finish with a list of the stakeholders and who are the committee people from that committee.
Just as a general explanation, our residents directly represented there one or another. Let alone that the council has some representative character and function, but are just the residents around the represented. Don't be specific, but if you just know, are they?
The chairperson is from the locality.
Okay. But please provide us with such information. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the ESCOM colleague has provided a committee with assurance that these committees do exist. I think once the ESCOM is responding, just to also work with them to make sure that in terms of that there is enough representation for all the stakeholders that perhaps needs to be involved in this for the committee.
Honourable Chair, members, there are three aspects that I will deal with. The one is on the electrification item. The second one is on the ADEM program. And the third one is in the renewable energy IPP. So there's a couple of questions and comments made under those. So I'm just going to deal with that. And I can deal with it, Chair, if you, with your permission, according to the comments and questions as been made by respective members, starting with yourself, Chair. On INAP, the comments that have been made, is the question or the issue about the allocation of municipalities and then the municipalities need to improve their rollouts. I think it's a valid comment, Chair. I think we just need to take cognizance of the fact that we're dealing with municipal entities that is currently, a lot of them is not functioning well in terms of delivering a service like electricity. And now on top of that, they do electrification, so it's for us sometimes a huge challenge and a strong handhold to get them through this process. Now, I'll talk to specific figures just now. But secondly, we're also dealing with electrification within an environment where our networks is in a bad state. So you try to put on top of a bad state network to roll out 200,000+ connections annually. That puts a huge pressure on the way you plan and the way you monitor this program. Irrespective of that, Chair, I want to mention that, as been said, over 203,000 connections have been made. To put that in context, what it means is that for each working day in the last financial year, every 70 seconds, one new connection has been made, irrespective of all these challenges. So a lot of my grey hairs do with this. And it's irrespective of the fact that we shall...
Don't worry, you ain't great enough. You're still going to grade. You're still going to grade.
Thanks, you're giving me some confidence. but it's irrespective of the critical shortage of skilled, technical skilled people within municipalities. But on top of that, the way to manage the procurement process within municipalities is very long. It is between 6 and 9 months. Built on top of that, the fact that our municipal financial cycle is different from the national one. So when they just up and running administratively, the financial period is passed. So you just think, get these figures out that would reflect here. It's really difficult. A person yesterday told me, said, you know, you can lead an entity, and he just mentioned in general. They said the best way to explain it is by means of a rope. Rope can only be used to pull. You can't push an entity with a rope. You can only pull them. So we're in that stage where we can only pull them. We can't push them anymore. We can just pull them. So we pull all resources to pull them forward. So irrespective of that, I think it's actually a miracle that we have 50,000 connections last year. I just have to mention that in terms of mixing questions that have been posed, I think Honourable Smiley posed a question, and also the Honourable Prof, in terms of the percentage spent and the percentage being delivered is not talking to each other. One of the reasons, as I just mentioned, but please take cognizance of the fact that we should have this mismatch of financial years also. So when we have closure here, the fund is honestly just peaking in terms of delivery. So we missed the peak of delivery because the last 3 months of your financial year is your peak of delivery. So they are actually delivering the next financial year. So that's why we try now also in our reporting talk about rollovers that can capture also within the captures in that specific year. So with that being said, Honourable Chair, we also, and my apologies, you might mention the fact that we're not doing enough in terms of communication with you, and you made specific reference to the new household electrification strategy. And my apologies for that, but I do also have to mention that we did indicate we're willing to share with you the strategy. It was in the beginning of July been approved by Cabinet, so we will forward that document to you later this week. So my apologies for that. But in that, we also then address some of these issues. And I think it's important that we do focus on the fact that two things. The one is that we do going to need to make sure that the entities that are performing to be supported. And ESCOM is on this list, you'll see 85% of all the monies that's been transferred to them have been brought back into connections in the financial year. Because we have a certain cut-off, if you look back, you'll see they actually spend 95% of all their funds within the financial year. So we have to put more emphasis on ESCOM, SAE to support us in this. It's also part of our broader delivery of infrastructure in this country. So ESCOM will get more allocations because of the delivery. And we also are refining income through the municipalities more securely that we support those that can deliver. But politically, it's very difficult. I mean, who at the end of the day is the beneficiaries of this? Now, you're sitting with maybe an official, maybe a system, a slow system, municipality that's not working. And now you want to get that municipality. And then it's not them, it's the customers, but then the customer doesn't receive the service. So it's a very difficult moral thing also to deal with. Another very specific question around IMAP was the issue about using technology, and I think, Chair, you put it in general in terms of using technology to assist the service delivery. It's correct. We are, and there's also for solar water geyser, same process. Technology has been developed, and we're in the process of running tests around some of that. So, because I think it's also important, we can't just rely on 100% of that. We need to test and also get the entities that implement the connections. They also need to utilize the right technology. And if they remember for education program, we're running 925 different projects parallel in this country. See, all those entities need to have the right tools to feedback using the technology. One thing to have the technology, but also then to have the people on the ground to use it effectively. The other issue is on the supervision, on notification transfers. I think it's part of what I just said now, is that I think our approach is much more specific now, and to the level that each municipality must have a signed contract. Now, the signed contract also must have a business plan attached to it. And that business plan is a guide of how they're going to deliver. But still, irrespective of that, Chair, we defined a number of times you arrive on site, irrespective of the signed business plan, then you find they visit and you find a totally different area. And then they come to you and say, well, there's no supply, there's no substation, where's the money for the substation? So at the next moment, there's outcrafting communities. So we're getting that. So we do our best in terms of planning, but on the ground sometimes it's difficult. What I can say is I think that our relationship with our entities, specifically ESCOM and some of the major municipalities, have improved dramatically around this. And I wanted to share with you that for this financial year, our connection rate is increasing. You'll see, if you call us again, we'll share with you the fact that our level of delivery is improving because of more stringent monitoring there. But it's still a long way to go, but we're working on it. I think that the next issue about INAP was the issue that, and I want to be specific on why I've 40% been transferred, all money been transferred to municipalities, and 40% been spent. A lot of this is to do with the fact that, as I said, it mismatched in the financial years, but also this year, a lot of funds went into infrastructure. Infrastructure is difficult because it's an order, you haven't paid, so the money hasn't been transferred in terms of hardware that's been delivered. The next issue, and I have nothing, that's the last one, is the issue about what are we doing to listen to that one, I think I answered, the ratio between ESCOM and municipalities. Yes, Chair, I think in terms of INAP Adult, the only one that's outstanding is the last one on non-grid, which falls in some category. The non-grid, and you made a reference to the fact that we're missing our achievements, that's correct. We aren't achieved last year what we supposed to achieve. Chair, again, it is easy, and they always say, you know, officials are very good with having excuses, but we have to put it in context. Remember that the non-grid component, up till now, neither ESCOM nor one municipality in this country said, we will make non-grid part of our delivery. Okay, it's not part of the business. So we have to get in there and negotiate ESCOM and municipality before we can get into an area, because remember, this country is all licensed by those two entities. So now we need to negotiate. That process of negotiation has improved dramatically also. And on top of that, then you need to negotiate with the local structures, including community. That takes a while. We just had last week a very bad experience where after 18 months of really intense negotiations, where even the service provider is on the ground, the ward member turns around and says, I don't want the people here, please leave the site. 2,200 connections is down the drain. After 18 months is hard negotiations. And now we have to start over again. You know, we thought we were going to have that in even so after customers have paid their deposits. So that's the reality we're dealing with. So it's excuses, apologies for that, but it's the reality that we're dealing with. So it's not a straightforward transfer, it is negotiation before you can move in. I think also the last one is that from our side, we also need to do a bit more, a lot more, on educating the potential customers on non-grid. I think that it's also something that we are falling short. We're very directional in delivery of service, but behind non-grid, behind any infrastructure delivery, is an upfront excellent communication strategy. And I think that's where we haven't been that good. So, Chair, that's on a non-grid. So, on the INAP, I think, according to my notes, I dealt with it. If I skip something, it's not that I didn't want to answer it. It's just maybe that I took very intense notes of everything. On the ADEM program, Honourable Chair members, yes, I think some questions probably stems from not that we shared enough on this. Firstly, there was a comment being made and a question asked why that asked about 387 million rands from ED Holdings that one went to National Treasury and back to us. I want to start there. On ED Holdings, remember that amount that has been referred to was a negotiated amount between NERSA and National Treasury. So that funds has been seen by National Treasury, not DB funds. It belongs to the broader community of payers of services in the country. So it wasn't being seen as our money. So we had to motivate the National Treasury for that funds. And if you now look at the 87 million rands, this would be the 320 million that we talk about. Now it's where the rest of that money. The rest of that money went to NERSA, because it says that they also have to support the electricity infrastructure services in this country. So the rest went to them, and we got 320 million as allocated by National Treasury. So the idea was with 320 million versus 32 billion plus rands backlog. You think to yourself, it's nothing in comparison. So the purpose of this 320 million was just to applied as pilots. So seven municipalities, and this question, who is the municipalities of the names now, the two metros have been decided upon in terms of what they proposed us. So the idea was, because it's a pilot, we could choose different municipality metros. But we decided we want to use from the ones that are really in deep trouble to some metros that just need here and there an assistance. So we have a whole spectrum that we can, with this little bit of money, can test. And I can just share with you that what is coming out now is actually a very good story. Is that we did this exercise 2 years ago where we asked for municipalities, please submit to us your wish list. And we asked again that same wish list came, some of them was escalated, but when we start interrogating, we find that a lot of, and it comes back to schools' technical understanding of their own business, the municipality just receives bids from consultants just forward to us. They don't analyze it. So what it is, analyze all that. The chair once said that this is 720 million rands. If you look at what we're going to get out of it, it can be over 600 million rands worth of assets we're going to get out of it. Because if we just did it normally, they were just built in fact, there was no clear direction how it's going to be done. And it's not done only by us. There's a whole steering committee, MISA's involved, National Treasury, and NERSA, to make sure that what allocation we made is not double count when they apply to this again for allocation. So I think it's just that in background context. So it's a pilot. It wasn't to try to solve the issue. It's to see if we allocate a certain amount of funds, what effect can it have? And we analyze it from start until where we are now. The last point I want to make around this issue too is that from a territory point of view, there's no way they're going to make any allocation to municipalities for network upgrades. The sole reason, if you're going to look to the allocations in the tariff applications of municipalities to NERSA, in all of them, there's a portion has been allocated for network upgrading. So if you look at the municipalities' budget, you will find it sits there, but if you look at the end of the financial year that's been spent, it's a huge difference. The cap that's been set as an average by NERSA is 5% of your revenue for electricity need to go for maintenance upgrade. But in reality, we spent much, much lower than that. And the rest is going to someone else. Because of that, National Treasury are also busy developing a new bill where they want all administrative tariffs that's allocated for infrastructure development need to be ring-fenced. So it can prevent where allocations have been made on allocation to NERSA, a proof and count of that, but at the end of the day, the network's infrastructure is not reached by that amount. So I think that's a very positive thing that will help the whole industry. National Treasury did some analysis on this, and they found quite large numbers of amounts of allocations that's been done by municipalities for upgrades that already is in the hands of municipalities, but not finding its way. And hence the National Treasury's argument saying no funds for network upgrade is already in the system. So the last one is then I haven't answered the question on which municipalities. And actually, we're also welcome to do a full presentation, on this issue. But the two metros is Nelson Mandela and Mungu. And then the municipalities is KSD, Umtata, Nala, Ndusi, Solpraki, Stockbridge, as I mentioned, a few of them. The last one on the IVPs, actually, I can just mention that the real IVPs is as Rabin said, it's a successful story. The district is 28 successful. The construction of those sites is going very well. I can mention that in terms of the business plans, they're right now around about 20% in advance of what they plan to be. So you also find that some of them make announcements that they can go live. And in a couple of weeks' time, two of them we know are going to go live in 2 weeks' time, test the supply onto the networks.
Please update us so that some of us who are near those places may visit.
I will do so, yeah. No, thanks. I think it's important. The one is in Nelson Mandela, the other one is in outside of Kimberley, PD system and the wind farm in Nelson Mandela area. It's just by the off of my head that I know that is very, very far. And it's busy testing to go live. On the next question on the IVPs was the amount of money being spent on women-owned entities. Honourable Chair, remember, I don't have that specific figure with me, but I promised to share it with you. What I do have is what I've been procured up till end of August with virtual E entities. That was 1.65 billion rands already. But I don't have the breakdown. I have it. I know we capture that way. The youth, women-owned entities, etc. But I didn't have that now with me. And I didn't get quick enough the information back from office. But we have that information. I just also just mentioned on that at the end of it, wasn't the question, just in terms of window one, over 14,000 jobs have been created. And of those, over 4,000 is youth employed. Thank you, John. My apologies, I was also to just mention that the issues about solar water geysers and energy efficiency will be dealt with Ms. Modise.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. There was a question on why are we not providing the direct figure instead of saying above 350,000 units. The actual number that I would give is as of end of August, because we normally lag behind by a month to allow the measurement and verification process before we consolidate the figure. At the moment, we are. Let me just a minute. At the end of August, we were at 379,649 units, with an additional 5,000 being considered now from some areas in KZN through the rollout on ANEP site. And we hope that by end of October, we should be in a position to be just around 385,000 units. And the other question was on the challenges that in 2012 and 2011, we were reporting that we will be able to meet the target. However, at the moment, the Auditor General's report already indicates that we may not meet the target as set. Honourable members, I need to take you back with respect to the new approach in terms of the current rollout. You would recall that in 2011, government signed Green Economy Accord with private sector, and in some of the commitments made, or to put an emphasis with respect to the procurement, the provincial procurement policy framework, it's to roll out with respect to localization. In the current financial year, or starting from the previous financial year, there was some work done led by the Department of Trade and Industry, particularly for the solar water heating sector, to designate some of the components with respect to localizing that within a country. And that study was concluded with the issuing of the instruction note by National Treasury or the Minister of Finance, and that came into effect in on the 5th of August 2013. But prior to that, the Minister of Finance signed the instruction note in June. There is a tender that was issued in the first quarter of the current financial year, but already addressing the conditions that are expected within the instruction note, where the designated components of the solar water heater, like collectors as well as the tanks, the feeders or the suppliers, the manufacturers are expected to meet a 70% threshold. And with that 70% threshold, the tender could not proceed on the basis that we could not get the qualifying bidders, and that also created a lag behind, but we're still proceeding with the instruction note or the compliance in terms of local content. And two, with respect to the new approach, we also had to look back in terms of some of the challenges and see how they could be best addressed in the future rollout. like for example, we had issues in terms of the water quality analysis, and with the current approach, we had to get the blue water status report from Department of Water Health, so that when the selection of areas is done, we are aware of the areas that have issues of water quality. To the issues around poor workmanship, as mentioned in the main presentation, those we needed also to work on that. So the new approach is involving all the key stakeholders in the value chain, being the municipalities, being the South African Bureau of Standards, the department, ESCOM, as well as the manufacturers. Meaning that the issue of having poor or non-compliant units we are dealing with in the current approach, the issue of having the units being certified by the South African Bureau of Standards is being considered, which ultimately there would be back-to-back agreements with respect to the rollout. The ESCOM would be expected to sign contracts with the South African Bureau of Standards, so that as the rollout is in progress, the units are verified, where ultimately we will be in a position to say this unit of this serial number is installed at Mohadi Modise's house at this GPS coordinates, this is the address of the owner, and these are the energy saved. With the manufacturers, they would be signing the implementation agreements as well as the manufacturing contracts with ESCOM to make sure that all the units comply with the standards as required, and also the conditions that are put within the manufacturing specification are also adhered to. And the third question was like the delay, whether the department would be able to meet the target set. I also want to refer to the rescheduling of funds. In 2011-12, we received 4.7 billion. However, early in 2012-13, there were rescheduling of funds, which pushes the target now to 50-60, because some of that 4.7 billion would only, the 700 million would only come at a later stage in 15-60, instead of having completed the target. But the approach now would be, like, when we go out on tender, would be to contract the manufacturing for the next 3 years as the outstanding target to be met. And we hope that through the new approach, we would be able to push to the target effort. I'm not sure whether I addressed all the
I do need to move with speed. I'm looking at time.
Yeah.
Who else is
so those are the questions on solar water heating. We can also come at a later stage to present in detail the contracting model on how we would be working and like how we are addressing all the key issues with respect to the challenges that we have been experiencing in the past. But okay. We are very positive that now it looks more positive than even before.
Thank you, Mama Chip.
Thank you, Chair. The first question was on contingent liabilities. The contingent liabilities are dependent on certain issues happening, and they are all legal cases against the department. There's a whole list of them, but just to give you the two biggest ones, one is Trevina Cabas, the office that we did occupy. It's for the demand of rental because of the case of the premises earlier. There has been progress in that area. And the other one was by a community in Limpopo, where they have electrified the area, and they have cited the minister as some DMRs as making a promise that she was going to reimburse them, but no legal action has happened in that area. The second question was on the decommissioning
level. From where?
Limpopo. Chair.
Which department? No.
DMB.
Oh.
Okay. The other question that was raised was the guarantee for Nexa, the 20 million rand. This is for the Nexa as a current account. Nexa cannot provide a guarantee for its own bank account from its own balance sheet, but as a 100% shareholder, the department did provide a letter of guarantee. It's not a legal funds. That was an agreement with the minister. environmental liabilities also with INXA? Yes, it has increased from 1.7 billion to 3.7 billion. The revaluation was last done in 2004, which was about 7 years ago, and several factors in the costing estimates of the disused liability, including the methodology that was used then, has now been re-evaluated that liability to be more accurate. And each year we also reassess it for increases in CPIs. The loan of 1 rand was addressed. And EDI money, just one comment, that whatever money I get into the bank account of the department, I have to the vendor, and I reapply via the process. Then there was a delay in the procurement of IT equipment, that is true. The appointment of the service providers is done strictly via CETA, and there is a delayed process. The process is not an easy one. And the supplier did undertake to deliver the equipment in March, but unfortunately couldn't deliver, citing the reasons the AP stock in the country was low at that stage. And okay, just one last question on the strategic alignment of the strategic plans to the budget. It is a doable task, but the process of the National Treasury MTF budget cycle and our strategic planning has to be aligned and be in sync to ultimately achieve that. But having said that, Chair, not all the targets are budget related, but it is a doable task. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much,
I think I have three questions on my side. I'll start with the simpler one. I've already provided the Honourable Member, Ms. Petilela, with the figures in relation to the intents. The question was, what do we intend doing with the intents at the end of the internship program? You'll realize that most of the intents are placed within the branch programs and projects. Dr. Barnett, during his presentation, has alluded to the fact that some of the challenges relate to capacity within municipalities. Those intents, the majority thereof, are placed, you know, the intention is to place them at, you know, municipal level so that we address the issue relating to the capacity challenges that are faced by the municipalities. Those that are in the department, if the department is in a position to place them, because we are required to advertise those positions, you know, we are intending to give a preference to those intents because they are already used to the work environment and they will be in a position to deliver, you know, what we expect of them to deliver. The other question related to clarity, I think it's on slide number 12, relating to the number of approved posts, that is 818. Yes, it is correct that the currently approved organizational structure of the department does make provision for, you know, 818 posts, but because of funding constraints, as we've been consistently indicating, those are funded is 556, which leaves us with, a difference of 262. But because as and when we get funding, we prioritize the posts through the Departmental Organizational Development Committee and the Finance Committee that prioritizes funding, you know, allocates funding accordingly to the prioritized posts or critical posts. Currently, we are in the process of filling 28 prioritized posts that are funded from an approved structure of 818 posts. And gradually, we will be in a position, you know, to find a way of, you know, funding and filling, you know, all those posts that are on the approved organizational structure of the department. The chairperson asked a question relating to the 50% of the staff complement within Program 1, which houses support services, that is the CFO's office, the COO's office, as well as corporate services. I had just requested the committee secretary to load the presentation, which outlines the history where this, you know, where this challenge comes from. There's no time. Okay. You'll remember, Chairperson, that I did. Okay, Chairperson. My apologies, Chairperson. Chair, you'll remember that during the implementation of the approved organizational structure of the Department of Energy, that structure was approved by the Minister of the Department of Energy, and the Minister of Public Service and Administration did concur with the structure. But when we're just about to implement the structure, we were told that funding will not be made available, but you know, only funding for critical positions will be made available. Hence, the department decided on implementing the interim organizational structure. And then because we're a new department, we did not have, you know, support services components, hence we had to find a way of creating the support services component within the interim structure, and those support services functions were corporate services, the office of the CFO, and the office of the COO. Up to today, we haven't as yet implemented holistically the whole structure, but and in as far as line function components are concerned, a decision was taken that seeing that we don't have funding, we implement the line function structure as inherited from the old DME. That was the structure for hydrocarbons and energy plan, as well as the structure for electricity, nuclear, and clean energy. Hence, I indicated earlier on when I alluded to, I mean, when I was answering the question relating to 818 posts, to the fact that we are prioritizing posts, and we are gradually, as and when we get funding, increasing the number of funded posts within line function components. We are in a process of ensuring that we align our compensation of employees as and when we receive it, you know, funding with the mandate, you know. The problem started just when you were, you know, establishing the department and were required to only fill critical posts, and the decision that only, you know, those components that we inherited, particularly in the line function components for the old DME, should remain as is, and as and when we get funding, we will increase the staff complement within those areas. Thanks, Chair.
Anyone else? We're done. Okay. Look, let's wrap up, people. We can get other stuff. I don't want us to get so depopulated. Of course, we do consider all the members that at the end of the day, we're doing this in order to produce our own reports on budget review, which will have recommendations. I would like to kick off by saying, surely we have to work intensively for the next two and a half weeks, I suppose, until we have the report coming out. And I'm going to submit some of, even for myself, some of the questions in writing so that you respond to them. At the end of the day, it's not just an academic exercise. It's going to be a basis for us to make recommendations. But I just would like to highlight for record purposes that one area of concern is also this project Maputa, because I don't see the department saying anything there. On one side, you say SASO decided to slow down the Maputa project. But on the other side, SASO is investing $20 billion, not even $20 billion, $20 billion in Louisiana, the U.S. Now the question is, how are they going to come next to Maputa? With things all equal, whereby their concerns are being met. Surely we'd like to get a response from the department that already comes, because at the end of the day, the diver in the department will ensure adequate
and secure supply of energy. Another area that is of interest to me is the infrastructure grid. There's the department providing something, there's ESCOM, there's municipalities. At some stage you need to be quite clear who provides what, which substations, or at what stage does the department make a contribution on substations, you know, things like that, and a municipality. Surely, another area that would have been nice if you had time to respond to is the energy efficiency monitoring project, smart meter project, which includes transfers to Saneti. Hopefully, we can get the department working with Saneti to get us all that you know, information. That also includes updates on work for energy projects, the extent which the allocation on the carbon capture and storage project have been done. Just quickly, two other things, honourable members. The reporting structure between energy and national treasury seems to be an issue. And I'd like us to take that up after the meeting so that we can make a recommendation, because that's one of the things that we've picked up in our observation. The way you're supposed to report on financial performance, if I remember, why, I think the question is, why is that different? My naive understanding is that as a department you have your programs, so the National Treasury must actually assess you on the basis of how you have structured your programs, but it doesn't seem so. But obviously we work on that. Once again, as a lesson, hopefully we'll go into the future better off, and I trust even with this current financial year, the department is already moving. The DPME, Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, did make Indraja not so bright future, or not a bright future about the management practices within the department, because for strategic management, they are the only one that they said the department was performed well at level 3, but the others all were at level 2. Needless to go through that, but just to highlight one area, that of disciplinary cases. Yes, we take your point of what you said, but once again, let's just express the concern that try your best to make sure that disciplinary cases don't impact negatively on the morale stuff. Not so easy as I say, but whether it's a management issue, apparently a prerogative, but we would like to see staff that's really highly motivated, because you're operating in a highly pressurized environment. You have not received the requisite personnel you'd love to get, so it's easy for people to react to that kind of pressure, you know, that we can see. But please do your best so that when you get a report for this current financial year, we see an improvement on those areas. Of course, without staying on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and also on procurement issues, which are things that have come up quite strongly. Hopefully, there'll be issues of the past. But I don't remember, I think on the overall, we do have enough ammunition for us to consider and make our findings as usual, and draw lessons and make recommendations to the House on the National Assembly, and thereby at the end of the day we would find our way to the department through the proper channels. I hope one of the things we will ensure that we do in future is to monitor the extent to which there's been responsiveness to our recommendations, because whilst this is a high pressure exercise, we shouldn't be just academic, you know, because we make an effort to ensure that we make a contribution. And it would be good also just to alert the department and say we'd like to see definitely a response
on the recommendations that you get. Because at the end of the day, we know that they land on the minister's desk. And this very current exercise is actually a step towards that. I think in that respect, let me thank everyone. It was quite an intensive effort. And as I've said, yesterday, tomorrow, it will be